we have 37 degrees under mostly clear skies. Lambert Field is reporting 37 and clear skies as well. It's time now for the award-winning wake-up call with your host, Liz Brown. She's up next. We'll take another look at your traffic and weather in the bottom of the 6 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
Time now for another edition of the Wake-Up Call with Liz Brown. Views expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or advertisers of WGNU Radio. This broadcast is a production of Norman Broadcasting Company, Incorporated, and WGNU Radio, and is intended solely for the information and entertainment of our listening audience. Any rebroadcast, transcribing, recording, or other use of this material without the expressed written consent of Norman Broadcasting Company, Incorporated, and WGNU Radio is strictly prohibited. We ask that you govern your calls within the bounds of brevity and good taste. And now, the wake-up call with Liz Brown.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brother, how can I listen?
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the morning wake-up call. This is Liz Brown, living my life as an African and loving it. 454-0400 is my phone number, 1-877-920-WGNU. That's my long-distance number. We have so much stuff to talk about. 454-0400 is the phone number. You need to get up. You need to get to me. This is the day before George Bush's State of the Union address. This is a big deal. This is the time where, during anybody who's in the White House, anybody who sits in the office of the presidency, this is their biggest captive audience. Every station carries the speech. It's a big deal. We've had Katrina. We've had thousands of people killed in Iraq. tens of thousands of people wounded, tens of thousands of people dead, Iraqis dead. We have had a, let me, I don't know, I want to try to be as clear as I can. Joblessness. The joblessness rate has jumped from 3.9% to 4.9%. The numbers of families living in poverty has increased from 8.7% to 10.2%. Trade deficit has doubled. Inflation is up. Personal bankruptcies are up. Consumer debt is up. College tuition has gone up. Therefore, the number of children being able to go to college has been reduced. The price of gas has gone insane. The administration has turned a $128 billion budget surplus into a $319 billion deficit. 6 million more Americans do not have any health insurance than when Bush took office. 15% of our total population have no health coverage at all. This seems like such a long time ago, but it wasn't. During his 2003 address, State of the Union address, Bush told our nation that Saddam Hussein had weapons, biological weapons, sufficient to produce over 25,000 liters of anthrax. Remember anthrax? Anybody remember anthrax? Remember that? Material sufficient to produce more than 38,000 liters of botulism toxin, 500 tons of sarin, mustard, and VX nerve agents, upwards of 30,000 munitions capable of delivering chemical agents. And that was just so interesting. Oprah's getting great reviews for taking on the guy who told 1,000,001 lies. 1,000,000 little lies. She's getting great reviews for that. She's getting great reviews for confronting a liar who tries to lie his way out of the truth. How come nobody has asked George Bush those same types of questions? Why'd you lie? Why'd you lie? And I look at these numbers, and I look at the state of our country, and I laid out all of these issues because George W. Bush, again, more people are watching him now than ever do during during any presidential speech that is given. And so given all of those things, given the economy in the state that it is, given the budget deficit, considering the budget deficit is where it is, considering the health care issue, considering post-Katrina, considering all of these things, one would think, one would suspect, one would guess, one would hope that George W. Bush's speech would be inclusive of all of those issues, touching on all of those issues. Addressing those issues, calming the nation, letting them know that these issues are being addressed. But it's going to be a real short speech. Oh, damn. And that's why I'm so excited that we're having Dr. Justin Frank on today. The author of Bush on the Couch, Inside the Mind of a President. Because these are crazy times that we're living in. And there's a crazy dude up there in Washington that's governing. And we need to talk about that. Why would this speech be a short one? It's only going to be an hour speech. You can't even talk about Katrina in an hour. You can't even talk about Katrina in an hour. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. You need to get up. You need to get to me. Are you surprised? Fewer people consider Bush to be honest and trustworthy now than did a year ago. 53% say that they believe that his administration is deliberately misled the public about Iraq's purported weapons program. Pollsters interviewed 1,000 American adults Friday through Sunday. Most of the questions in the survey had a margin of sampling of error, plus or minus 3 percentage points. 58% of those polls said that Bush's second term has been a failure so far. 52% consider his entire presidency a failure. That doesn't sound too good. 64% said things in the United States have gotten worse in the past 5 years. 28% said that things have improved. That's not good. That's not good. 454-0400 is the phone number. You need to get up. You need to get to me. On the other side of the issue, please don't ever say, that your positions, your participation, your attitudes, your actions don't make a difference. There are 3 big-time Democrats that are running for re-election. All of them should be skating into an easy, easy, easy re-election campaign. I guarantee you this. When we left the show on Friday, I was telling you all, you need to call your representatives. You need to call your Democratic senators. I'm not talking about the one. We don't have any Democratic senators in the state of Missouri. You need to call all the Democrats and say that you support a filibuster. When I left the air on Friday, Hillary Clinton wasn't in support of a filibuster. When I left the air on Friday, Feinstein wasn't in support of a filibuster. When I left the air on Friday, Harry Reid wasn't in support of a filibuster. By the time Saturday, Sunday rolled around, we had press releases from Hillary Clinton saying, oh, yeah, I support a filibuster. Feinstein, who didn't support a filibuster, said, oh, yeah, okay, I can go that way. Now, and Harry Reid, who said that there's no chance of a filibuster succeeding, said, well, I will support one. Do you hear what I'm saying? By the time we left this show, when I walked out the door of this studio on Friday, Harry Reid was saying no. Hillary Clinton was saying no. Feinstein was saying no. When we got back here on Monday, all 3 of them are saying yes. Now, let me tell you something else that's in play. Don't ever think that what you do doesn't matter. Don't ever think that what you do, what you say, when you act doesn't matter. Feinstein may be getting a little bit of competition in her re-election campaign. Guess who's going to run against her because of her war? Who's talking about running against her because of Feinstein's record on the Iraq war? Cindy Sheehan. You heard me. Cindy Sheehan. Cindy Sheehan holds no illusion. She says, I don't think I can win this race, but I certainly think that we can raise the level of discussion and debate on this war issue. Just like when Mary Beth Cahill was on my show, the former director of John Kerry's campaign. She said, well, we can't fight because, you know, we don't own it. I mean, we don't control everything. Somebody's got to fight. Cindy Sheehan is getting some Dianne Feinstein is getting some competition. That's one of the reasons I suspect. I can't prove it, but I believe very much that that's one of the reasons that Feinstein came out and said, okay, yeah, yes, filibuster, cool. Filibuster, yeah, down with it. I would have said something about it, but I just forgot to do the memo. Yeah, no, I'm down with it. I'm down with a filibuster. Guess who else is getting some competition? This one, I may go sign on and work for this person my own self. Guess who else is getting some competition that should... Now, we've already know about Hillary Clinton's competition because we had her competitor. We had her opposition on my show. Oh, yeah, we had her opposition on my show. Guess who else is getting some competition? Are you ready? Joseph Lieberman. That's right. Couldn't happen to a nicer guy. Lieberman could get some competition. Ned Lamont, a businessman and war critic, last week began publicly seeking support for a run against Lieberman in the August nominating contest. Lamont is attracting attention largely because of Democratic grumbling in Connecticut and nationally about Lieberman's unflinching support of Bush's policies in Iraq. Although Lieberman would enjoy, according to this article, significant advantages in fundraising and name recognition, when Connecticut Democrats were asked whether they wanted the senator nominated for a fourth term, 52% said yes, 39% said that they would prefer a new candidate. That's huge. That is huge for an incumbent. Those are huge numbers. And here's what the Democrat, and these are the people that are in charge of the Democratic Party. And this is why you have such floundering, and this is why you have such weakness, and this is why you have the Democrats holding a press conference on ethics after the Republicans held a press conference on ethics change. You are stupid. But that's why you have these kind of stumblings and stupidness. That's a new word, stupidness. Because people like Lieberman are in charge of the Democratic Party, the DLC. And here's a quote from the DLC. If Lieberman lost his primary race, it would be catastrophic for the Democratic Party. Now, remember, this is the dude that looked Democrats in the face and said that they need to stand up for their president. He said, it is time for Democrats who distrust President Bush acknowledge that in matters of war, we undermine presidential credibility at our nation's peril. You need to get out of here. You need to get out. That's what Lieberman said. And the DLC says, if Lieberman lost his race, it would be catastrophic for the Democratic Party because it would send a message nationally that the centrists are unwelcome. No. What it would send a message to would be sending a message to the Democratic base saying, you know what? Republican lights need to go home. Ain't nobody trying to be a Republican light. If you are a Republican, then go run for the Republican Party. Run in the Republican Party. Run as a Republican. Centrists are not compromisers. Compromisers, lapdogs, water carriers are not welcome. I think those would be more accurate assessments. 454-0400 is my phone number. Get up. Get to me. Rose, you're on the wake-up call.
Liz.
Good morning.
It's been a while since I listened to WGNU. I didn't know you guys were screening the calls now.
Yes, it's a new policy. Yes, ma'am.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, I just was curious because I got an email from MoveOn telling me to contact Durbin and Obama.
That's right.
About the filibuster.
That's right.
And I just was curious if you knew, because I just got off work, if you had heard whether either of them have come out in support of it.
I read on last week, on Friday, we talked about this on the show, that word has it, rumor has it, Buzz Flash was reporting it last week, that Obama is telling Democrats not to filibuster. It's not the appropriate strategy.
Oh, man. He would have been the first one, I think, to support it.
Yep.
Oh,
yeah. And
I've emailed and called everybody I can.
And get on the horn and call Obama's office, because that's reprehensible.
It is.
It's reprehensible.
I didn't know if he'd listen to me because I don't think I'm in his area or whatever.
And I'm telling everybody it doesn't matter, because the Democrats need all of our support all across this country.
That's true.
And we have these elections coming up, so every Democrat is going to be listening to see if Democrats out there or see if progressives out there, folks are supporting them on this filibuster. So absolutely, people are calling plenty of Democrats all across this country, whether you're in that area or not. They need to hear from you.
Well, I'm going to do it.
All right, Rose. Thank you.
Hey, take care, Liz.
You
Bye.
Too. Bye-bye. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. Get up. Get to me. Al, good morning.
Good morning, Ms. Liz Brown.
Brother Al, what's up?
Let me give you some good news first. It is.
All right, now.
Your man, Tiger Woods, won the first Buick Open of the season.
Yes, he did.
The next good news is you must pick it up. The book by Anne Farrell, Complicity. That's a must, Liz.
What's it about?
It's about African-American slavery up north, down south.
Anne Farrell?
Anne Farrell. She's the co-author to the book Complicity.
Okay, I've written it down.
Now, let me address our president and his State of the Union message. You think he's going to tell all of us, Liz, that he gave all his friends and partners a tax break and a tax giveaway and didn't sick them on the rest of us, his gas and all friends, and said, go after them. Get and take whatever you can get from them.
Absolutely not.
You don't think he's going to tell us that, is he?
Absolutely not. It's only going to be an hour speech.
Is there any let up,
Liz,
to how far this man will lie? What is his agenda, Miss Liz Brown?
Money for his friends.
What is this?
Money for his friends.
Why are the American businessmen with all the profits so greedy, Liz?
I can't explain that. I'm not familiar with that.
Thank you.
Take care. We're going to take a break, folks. I'm Liz Brown. This is the Wake Up Call. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. Get up. Get to me. We have much, much, much to talk about. 454-0400 is the phone number. Get up. Get up. Get up. Get up, get to me. We have so much stuff to talk about. 1-877-920-WGNU is the long distance number. I'll be back.
I'm watching Martin Luther King, who had a dream. Oh, so take this dream and apply it to your life. Even though we know the ghetto's rah-rah, but we got to. Keep your head up.
Keep your head up.
Cause a new day will come. And love to the sun. Even when the darkness shall come. Oh, 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 oh. Oh, oh.
Good morning, St. Louis. 32 minutes after the hour, 6 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by your Greater St. Louis Area Toyota Dealers. Northbound 55 between 141 and Rivas Barracks. Look for no problems to report there. Eastbound 44 from 109 to Geyer Road. Everything is on the move. Eastbound 40, no problems there to report. Eastbound 70 from Cave Springs to Natural Bridge looks good. Northbound 270 from 55 to Big Bend, everything is on the move. Westbound 270 from Canal Bridge all the way to Old Halls Ferry, no problems to report there. Westbound 5570 from 111 to the Poplar Street Bridge, everything is moving well. Westbound 64 at Bowell Avenue and Poplar Street Bridge looks good. Westbound Kingbridge traffic from the railroad overpass all the way to Memorial. Nothing to report there. Northbound Route 3 from Monsanto onto the Poplar Street Bridge. Expect normal traffic. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by your Greater St. Louis Area Toyota Dealers. Toyota owners, tires are an important part of your vehicle through February. Purchase 4 tires from your local St. Louis Metro Toyota dealer and receive 3 complimentary oil changes. Toyota, moving you forward. Now taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Wednesday. Colder, partly cloudy early this morning and becoming mostly cloudy by the afternoon. Slight chance for showers, high in the lower 40s. This evening, mostly cloudy until early morning, then becoming partly cloudy with a low around 30. Tuesday, not quite as cool, partly cloudy, high around 50. And Wednesday, mostly cloudy with a high in the lower 50s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 37 degrees under partly cloudy skies. Lambert Fields reporting 37 and clouds as well. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call. That's up next. We'll take another look at your news, traffic, and weather in the 7 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
We're waiting for your calls at WGNU. From the local calling area, just dial 314-454-0400. If you're calling long distance, the toll-free number is 1-877-920-WGNU. If you are calling long distance from a car phone or want to use a particular name on the air, please let us know when you call. Get into Talk Radio with a Difference. That's Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920, WGNU.
It's the biggest change at WGNU in 30 years, and it's coming Monday, January 30th.
You want your preschooler to be ready for school. Trinity Tabernacle Child Development Center is ready to help you prepare your preschooler not only for school, but also for life. Trinity Tabernacle Child Development Center is an outreach of Trinity Tabernacle, Assembly of God in Bridgeton. Your child, age 2 to 4, receives a non-denominational Bible curriculum with Bible stories, songs, arts and crafts, plus lessons in numbers, science, arts, and phonics to help prepare him or her for kindergarten. Your child will also grow personally, socially, educationally, and spiritually every day as a unique individual created by God. Call Christine at 314-291-8839 to learn more about Trinity Tabernacle Child Development Center and to register your child. Open Monday through Friday from 6:30 a.m. to 6 p.m. Trinity Tabernacle Child Development Center, 11950 Mark Twain Drive in Bridgeton, 314-291-8839. Serving the community since 1979.
He's back!
By popular demand and because it's so right on time, we're putting President Bush back on the couch. Yes, Dr. Justin Frank returns to the next edition of Mondays at 9 for another analysis of the chief executive. Is the domestic spying issue indicative of a controlling personality? Does the president completely depend on Dick Cheney, or is he merely a puppet deciding who pulls the strings? So many more issues have cropped up that we decided another session was in order. Don't miss Dr. Justin Frank, author of Bush on the Couch, our special guest on the next edition of Mondays at 9. Around the world, behind the story. It's the award-winning wake-up call. Liz Brown.
What's your number, baby? This is Liz Brown, living my life as an African and loving it. 454-0400 is my phone number. Get up, get to me. You're on the wake-up call. Good morning.
Good morning, Miss Brown.
Good morning.
Last year, presidential State of the Union just spoke how proudly the elections in Iraq went and how democracy around the world is going. I just want to hear how proudly it's going to speak up on this Hamas victory over in Palestine. Oh, man, they caught off guard.
But wait a minute, T. Here's the thing. Is it acceptable for Condoleezza Rice in the job that she has? What's her job?
Secretary of something, I heard.
Okay. She is supposed to know what's going to happen in situations like this. Isn't this further proof? Because she's throwing her hands up. She said, I asked my people how this happened, and they didn't know. Well, you're the same idiots that got us into this war in Iraq, right? Isn't that another reason to throw them out?
The same intelligence.
And now they're saying they don't know that Hamas is going to win. I could have told you. In fact, I think I did tell you that Hamas was going to win. And they're the same folks that think that they need to tap our phones based on their intelligence?
Well, tell me this much. What's going to happen when these countries start thumbing off these threats? We won't give you no more of our money. Well, you keep your money. We'll go to China. We'll go get the money from the euro we'll make our own money. We'll print it up like you just printing yours.
Thanks for your call, T. 454-0400 is my phone number. You're on the wake-up call.
Yeah, good morning, Liz.
Yes.
Okay, I just heard you say that Barack Obama is not going to support the filibuster.
No, what I said was, I read in BuzzFlash.com last Friday, I reported it, that rumor had it, it had not been confirmed, that Barack Obama was advocating that we shouldn't, that not we, that the Democrats shouldn't engage, the Democratic senators shouldn't engage in a filibuster because it was not a good strategy. And he has not come out and supported the filibuster.
Yes, he has.
When did he do that?
He did it yesterday.
Yesterday?
On national news, yes, he did.
Okay, well, then.
I called everybody in my family. I am a resident of East St. Louis.
Yes, ma'am.
We all called him, and we placed, and we told him.
Excellent.
And,
excellent.
He changed, and so he is supportive.
Okay, well, he changed up from last week.
Yeah, he changed
up
yesterday.
And that's excellent. Thank you for reporting that.
Okay.
See, it does make a difference, doesn't it?
Makes a big difference.
It makes, and I'm so proud of y'all. Thanks for sharing that with us.
Okay.
Take care now. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. Keisha.
Hey, how are you, Liz?
I'm outstanding. How are you?
I'm doing fine. I called Senator Nelson's office and Feinstein. I called all their offices.
Excellent.
From White
Home. Excellent.
You know, because is the debate supposed to take place today in the Senate?
It's supposed to take place today. I've been searching the net to see what new reports are coming out about what's going to happen. The debate or the discussion on closure is going to come on today, take place today.
Okay, but Feinstein, did she say she's going to support this filibuster?
Yes, she did.
Okay, well, that's wonderful, man. You know,
Cindy Sheehan said is talking about running against her, so you know she's going to support the filibuster.
Yes, I hope the party stick together.
All right, Keisha, thank you,
Liz.
And congratulations for calling. Good job.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
454-0400 is my phone number. Get to me. D.
Good morning, Dr. Brown.
What's up?
Reporting to you, I called all the Democratic senators last night.
Yes, ma'am.
Every mailbox is full. They cannot take any more messages. So then we started calling the Republican senators to encourage them to join the Democrats to aid in filibustering Alito.
So were the Republican mailboxes full?
Empty. I mean, you could get through. And I told Lieberman, if you're still a Democrat, filibuster Alito.
Well, it looks like Lieberman's going to pick up a little bit of competition.
But Hillary's box been closed since Friday.
I bet it has. But you know she's come out and supported it now, you know.
I know she is.
All right.
Everybody's supporting
that's
it now.
Right. That's right.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. Toll free long distance is 1-877-920-WGNU. You're on the wake-up call.
Yes, how you doing, sister?
I'm outstanding, Aleem.
Yes, you might have commented on this before, and but about the May Day parade being moved downtown.
I don't understand why the German parades out in Germantown or Italian parades in on the Hill. Why aren't they being moved downtown?
Right, and then I trying to connect it to this new loud noise bill that they supposed to have in the Board of Aldermen.
And that's something we're going to be talking. We're going to be talking about that. We have a brand new program starting up on Thursday. Irene J. Smith and I are going to be starting a program on Thursday called Eye in the Lou, and we'll be covering all of that.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll be listening, sister.
All right. Take care.
All right.
454-0400 is my phone number. John, good morning.
Good morning. Liz, explain what a filibuster is.
Hello?
Yes.
Okay. Here's what I'm going to do. There are four different things that I want to talk about, and I only have a minute and a half to do that. So what I will do is I will come back on the break, and I will walk through exactly the closure process, the filibuster process, and the numbers that we need to make this happen. Okay? So stay tuned for that, okay?
Explain in detail what exactly a filibuster is and how it's done.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. My pleasure. One more quick question, then we got to go to break. Book Clark, please.
Yes, Liz, this matter of stupidity, when I was in high school, I had a part-time job working for the federal government. I was grateful. Now, there are some problems down there in Iraq on the trial of Saddam here. And quite frankly, after Bush leaves office, I think that he should be on trial for the wanton murders murders of our troops in Iraq. He should be put on trial. And, quite frankly, Saddam should be set free. Who are we to invade his country and kill his sons and display them on TV? Who are we to invade his country? Who are we?
Thanks for your call, Clark. We're going to take a break. I'm Liz Brown. This is the wake-up call. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have much, 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 much to talk about.
Love makes me treat you the way that I do. Gee, baby, ain't I good to you? There's nothing too good for a boy, that's so true. Gee, baby, ain't I good to you?
This is your wake-up call global news update. Dateline Virginia Beach. A charity backed by televangelist Pat Robertson is receiving a huge influx of cash from the federal government. Operation Blessing is an international charity set up by Robertson and is qualifying for money under the president's faith-based initiative that was established 5 years ago. Over the last 2 years, the organization has gone from getting a little over $100,000 to about $14.5 million. The program says it sticks to federal guidelines that maintain separation of church and state, and that the money it gets from Uncle Sam is used for humanitarian relief and not for evangelism. Robertson himself said when the faith-based initiative was proposed that it could cause charities to be neutralized because programs would become too reliant on federal money and too restricted by their demands. But he apparently was not speaking about programs he favors. Organizations that receive these federal grants are also allowed to hire only people that subscribe to their religious doctrine. Representative Bobby Scott of Virginia says that's a practice that is in direct opposition to federal anti-discrimination protections that have been in place for almost half a century. And Dateline Washington. The Environmental Protection Agency is again making preparations to test pesticides on humans. Specific criteria is being drawn up by the agency to allow for such experiments. Last year, the president signed a measure that does not permit such experiments until the EPA came up with regulations governing the tests. Pregnant women and children were specifically mentioned as not being allowed to be tested with the chemicals. Guidelines from the National Academy of Sciences and the Nuremberg Code from World War II are also being used to draw up the parameters. California Senator Barbara Boxer has seen the new EPA draft on the matter and calls it astonishing. She says this is not consistent at all with what Congress mandated. Boxer says the chemical makers are operating under the impression that they can use pregnant women and children to test as long as they tell the EPA at the beginning that the results of the impact on them will not be a part of the final report that gets submitted. This is your wake-up call global news update.
Science or religion, Republican or Democrat, politics, education, crime, or you just want to talk about Girl Scout cookies. What's your opinion? What's your solution? Tell me, Dave Linehan on Radio Free St. Louis, WGNU, Monday through Friday, 4 to 6.
For the past several years, you've heard WGNU's community calendar of events going on in and around the area. Ever wonder where the information comes from? The majority of it comes from our listening audience. If your nonprofit organization would like help promoting its events and ongoing operations free of charge, send all necessary information to calendar@WGNU.net. Please send the correspondence 2 weeks prior to any events. WGNU reserves the right to edit or reject submissions for reasons of time and content.
Talk radio that discusses what matters most to you. It's coming to AM 920, Monday, January 30th.
The St. Louis County Library will host an appearance by author Jill Connor Brown on Wednesday, February 8th at 7 p.m. She will be promoting her newest book, The Sweet Potato Queen's Wedding Planner and Divorce Guide. She'll discuss and autograph her book. Copies of the book will be available for sale from Left Bank Books. Get more info by calling 314-994-3300. Something for you from Radio Free St. Louis.
He's back.
By popular demand and because it's so right on time, we're putting President Bush back on the couch. Yes, Dr. Justin Frank returns to the next edition of Mondays at 9 for another analysis of the chief executive. Is the domestic spying issue indicative of a controlling personality? Does the president completely depend on Dick Cheney, or is he merely a puppet deciding who pulls the strings? So many more issues have cropped up that we decided another session was in order. Don't miss Dr. Justin Frank, author of Bush on the Couch, our special guest on the next edition of Mondays at 9. Starting your day with information you can't get anywhere else. It's the award-winning Wake-Up Call with Liz Brown.
Boom, peck, boom, peck.
I want a rimshot, hey.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. We have toll-free long-distance number at 1-877-920-WGNU. That's 1-877-920-WGNU. And don't forget, on Mondays at 9, we are going to be talking to author of Bush on the Couch, and I thought that this would be fitting and appropriate that we have a discussion with Dr. Justin A. Frank, author of Bush on the Couch, the day before the State of the Union, just to do a psychological analysis of where we have been over the last, since the last State of the Union address. These are amazing times that we live in. 454-0400 is my phone number. Now, we're talking about filibuster. What's interesting is the concept that people have, and the concept of that people have of filibuster has been shaped by a number of things. And I know one of the ways that our concept on filibuster has been shaped is by TV. Many people are familiar with the filibuster. In fact, the movie is playing on HBO now, conducted by Jimmy Stewart, playing Senator Jefferson Smith, that is, in Frank Capra's film, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. How many of you know what the longest filibuster was and what it was on? The longest individual speech goes to, of course, Strom Thurmond, who filibustered for 24 hours and 18 minutes against the Civil Rights Act of 1957. And what has happened is that the Senate, it used to be that House members as well as Senate members could filibuster. But in 1917, the senators adopt a Rule 22 at the urging of Woodrow Wilson that allowed the Senate to end a debate with a two-thirds majority vote. That's known as the cloture. The new Senate rule was first put to its test when the Senate invoked cloture to end the filibuster against the Treaty of Versailles. Even with the new cloture rule, the filibuster remained an effective way to block legislation since two-thirds vote is difficult to obtain. Over the next five decades, the Senate occasionally tried to invoke cloture, but usually it failed to gain the necessary two-thirds votes. So where we're going today is on the Senate is saying that they have enough rules or enough votes to bring this to a close. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. Mildred, you're on the air.
Good morning, Liz. Friday morning, about 9:30, I called Barack Obama's office.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept watching the chart on Friday as they changed, you know, to vote with their Democrats. Barack had voted Friday morning prior to the noon hour with his Democratic friends. And I want to say this, too.
Voted on what?
Voting on the filibuster. What are we talking about?
I know what we're talking about, but there hasn't been a... You're talking about the discussions that the Democrats had amongst each other, with each other, that they would come out and support the filibuster. There hasn't been a vote taken on a filibuster yet.
No, what I'm saying is that's the one I'm talking about, Friday morning.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way Barack Obama voted. He voted with his friends.
They haven't taken a vote on a filibuster yet.
No, I'm not talking about the filibuster. I'm talking about that chart they put up there, the N's and the Y's, and Barack Obama had voted in.
No, the chart was whether or not they supported a filibuster.
Absolutely.
Or not.
Okay. That's what
we're
I'm
not
talking about.
Okay.
Exactly what
okay.
I'm talking about.
Whether they supported a filibuster.
That's
okay.
That's right.
All right.
He cast his vote Friday morning before noon.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to go on to say this. You know, the Democrats have said that this surveillance does not meet with the Constitution, and it does not. Bush gets up behind them and tries to pass the buck on to the Democrats. And he says the Democrats gave him the authority for this surveillance when they gave him the authority to go to war. And that is a lie. And if I were the Democrats, I would hit him with this and hit him hard with it. I wouldn't let that stand. In other words, Bush is saying,
look,
they made me do it.
Look. George W. Bush has been blaming the Democrats for his decisions the entire time. He lied about the weapons of mass destruction.
Absolutely.
So that was an opportunity for the Democrats to stand up and say that you lied, too.
Absolutely.
So, I don't know.
They better stand up and say he lied, because he did.
Well, yeah, he did.
Okay, thanks.
You're welcome. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. You need to get up. You need to get to me. This State of the Union address is going to be huge. And it's going to be huge from the perspective of what it doesn't say. When you talk about one of the big things that that George W. Bush should be talking about is his success with Katrina. What he has done since Katrina, since turning on the light that nobody else had in New Orleans, and talking about Katrina. How many minutes do you think George Bush is going to spend on Katrina? How many minutes? How many minutes do you think he's going to spend on Katrina? We're taking all bets here. We're taking all bets. I say no more than, is that 2 minutes, George, or... Is that 2 minutes for the George is going to spend on it? 2 minutes, George? 3 minutes, George? 4 minutes, George? You going to spend on Katrina? We're taking all bets here. I bet you that George W. Bush doesn't spend any more than 3.5 minutes on Katrina. That's where I'm putting my money. 3.5 minutes on Katrina, if that. 3.5 minutes or less. Because how could he? George W. Bush promised to empty the shelters quickly. He promised and meet the immediate needs of the displaced, register victims, and provide housing and aid in the form of rental assistance and trailers. In Mississippi, 33,000 occupied trailers are meeting 89% of the estimated housing needs, but there have been 34,000 repair requests and maintenance complaints. In Louisiana, trailers have been provided for 37% of the 90,000 displaced people. Trailers have cost between $19,000 apiece to $75,000 apiece. Ooh. 3.5 minutes. I say a minute and a half, but yeah. I bet he says, you're right, Howard puts down terrorists. He says terrorists 9 times and 9/11 6 times. I'm going to go terrorists probably
a dozen times, because that's where his numbers are strong. He's going to say terrorists a dozen times, and he's going to, I think, 9/11 will be about six times, but terrorists at least a dozen times, because the Hamas have won the election. So that ought to, and then we have the Iran nuclear threat. And so I'm going to say a dozen. I'm going to say a dozen times he says the word terrorist in his hour speech, including applause. My name is Liz Brown. We'll be back. Stay with me.
The progress is healing the wound that's the low base.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air.
For the issues that matter most, it's AM 920 WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Daria Aldinger.
They're very seriously injured, but they are stable.
Colonel Brian Gamble with Landstuhl Army Hospital in Germany, where ABC's Bob Woodruff and Doug Vogt are being treated for the injuries they received in Iraq. Both men are in serious but stable condition with head and, in Woodruff's case, upper body injuries. The co-anchor of ABC's World News Tonight and his Canadian cameraman were embedded with U.S. and Iraqi troops near Baghdad.
Like so many have been in Iraq, Bob Woodruff and Doug Vogt were caught in a roadside bomb attack. There have been more than 200 of them across the country in the last week alone. Bob and Doug were riding in a U.S. and Iraqi military convoy north of Baghdad. Both were wearing Kevlar helmets and body armor. They had been standing in the rear hatch of an Iraqi military vehicle when the bomb exploded.
ABC's Aaron Katursky. 32 have been rescued. The rest could soon follow. Officials at a mine in Saskatchewan, Canada, say the miners trapped after an underground fire have been rescued. The others still underground are said to be okay. Jury selection begins today in Houston in the trial of Kenneth Lay and Jeffrey Skilling, the top two executives embroiled in the Enron scandal. Lay faces 7 counts of fraud and conspiracy, 31 for Skilling on both of those offenses, plus insider trading. And now if you ever wanted to know what went on electronically between employees of that company, you can. Here's ABC's Jim Hickey.
Most of the Enron emails were business-related, but many were not, including this one from a woman in Seattle to an Enron trader.
So, you were looking for a one-night stand after all?
Roger Mattis is CEO of Inboxer, an internet company which has categorized and posted on its website the Enron email, laying bare the seamy underbelly of corporate culture.
Things that you're absolutely shocked that people said.
The names of people who sent and received the messages are also posted, including former top executives Kenneth Lay and Jeff Skilling. Jim Hickey, ABC News.
President Bush practices a State of the Union speech a few more times today. This is ABC News.
This year, the government's going to give out over $350 billion to people like you who want to start a business, go back to school, or train for a new job. I'm Matthew Lesko, and I've written over 70 books on government programs. You've probably seen me all over the television shows, on talk shows. My new program shows you 15,000 government sources, where you can get like $100,000 to open up a coffee shop, $15,000 to write a book, or $30,000 to become a French chef, $9,000 to take a computer course, or $15,000 to finish college, get a GED, or a PhD. There's money to travel overseas, train your employees, or work on your invention. I've done all the work. You just have to make the call. Call toll-free 877-ASK-LESKO, and you'll get my book and six-hour audio tape program for only two payments of $29.95 plus $7.50 postage and handling. There's a 90-day money-back guarantee. Call toll-free 877-ASK-LESKO or 1-877-275-5375.
The Seattle Seahawks are getting settled in Detroit, where they'll begin practicing for Super Bowl 40. Their opponents, the Pittsburgh Steelers, arrive today. The big game is Sunday. Dress codes are one thing, but some say this is taking it a little too far.
No denim clothing to be worn to school. Why? Well, officials in Western Australia say that's because wearing denim is linked with having a good time. It's associated with what people wear on the weekend, what they wear for recreation. And apparently, there'll be no room for having a good time in school. A spokesman for the state education ministry says, it is just unacceptable at school. We're trying to lift the standards. And so, the wearing of denim is outlawed starting next year in the Western Australian secondary schools. I'm Gil Fox, ABC News.
Well, it may not be Janet Reno's celebrity dance party. Remember that old Saturday Night Live skit? But it's close. The former U.S. Attorney General joined another woman at a Miami fundraiser Thursday night for this duet of the Aretha Franklin hit. I'm Daria Alvinger, ABC News.
Here's
Here's another WGNU News update. This report brought to you by the Air National Guard. I'm Peyton Colston reporting. The search for a missing Granite City, Illinois girl allegedly abducted by her grandmother has been upgraded to a nationwide Amber Alert. Granite City police believe 5-year-old Michaela Christie was last seen in her grandmother's car around 6:15 last night in Pontoon Beach. Michaela's described as white with brown eyes and brown hair and was last seen wearing khaki capri pants and a black t-shirt with pink writing. Her grandmother, Deborah McFadden, is a 44-year-old white female, 5'4", and 115 pounds with brown hair and brown eyes. Authorities say McFadden is currently free on bond on a murder charge. The two may be headed to Texas in a silver 2000 Mercury Sable with Texas license plates Z25DWM. Anyone with information on Michaela Christie's whereabouts is urged to call police. In other news, Michael Anthony Taylor is scheduled to be executed Wednesday morning unless a stay currently in place remains. Taylor's attorney, John Simon, says a preliminary injunction was issued last month by a federal judge on the defense's challenge to the lethal injection procedure in Missouri.
He set a hearing for February 21st, which was as soon as he could hear the case, and he ordered the other side not to execute Michael until after he could hold the hearing. And they are aware of the weaknesses in their case, and so they are opposing this because they don't want Michael to have a fair hearing.
The state officials have filed an application with the United States Court of Appeals for the Eighth Circuit to vacate the federal judge's order. Taylor and his co-defendant, Roderick Nunley, were convicted of the 1989 rape and murder of Ann Harrison in Kansas City. In South St. Louis, a nursing home is facing opposition from organized labor. Yesterday, a rally was held in protest of cuts to CNA's and CMT's health benefits by Beauvais Manor Nursing Home. The Service Employees International Union Local 2000, which represents the workers at Beauvais Manor, says the move to cut benefits happened after new owners took over the home last year. Officials with the nursing home did not return calls seeking comment. Dr. John Neal wants to continue to pursue excellence at Maryville University. That was one of the points he made during his inaugural address as president of the 134-year-old school Friday. Neal says one of the first things he wants to focus on is adult learning.
I'm creating a task force that will start with a blank sheet of paper and say, what do we know today about the state of adult learning? And all with an eye to just one thing, and that is, what should an adult learning program look like at a very demanding, high-quality premier university?
Neal is also proposing the creation of a study abroad program in Germany, where students could study for a short period of time overseas as opposed to the traditional notion of studying abroad for a semester or longer. Neal took office this past July after serving 5 years as president of Ottawa University. And that's WGNU News for this hour, brought to you by the Air National Guard. Job description, guarding America and defending freedom. The Air National Guard is looking for someone just like you. Great training and college benefits available. Find out more at goang.com. That's goang.com. I'm Peyton Colston for WGNU News.
Good morning, St. Louis. 8 minutes after the hour, 7 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by McDonald's. Highway 185, a county highway YY, there's a report of an overturned vehicle that's down in Franklin County. Northbound 55 between 141 and Rivas Barracks. Let's for normal traffic there. Eastbound 44 between 109 and Guyer. Everything's flowing freely. Eastbound 40 from 141 all the way into 270 looks good. Eastbound 70 from Cave Springs to Natural Bridge. Nothing to report. Northbound 270 at Gravoy and Doherty Ferry. Look for slow traffic there. Westbound 270 between Canal Bridge and Old Halls Ferry. Look for no problems as well. Westbound 40 at 170 and McKnight. Everything is on the move. Eastbound 70 between K and 79. Look for normal traffic this hour. Westbound 270 at West 4th, and there's some slight delays. Westbound 5570 from 4th Street onto the PSB. Slow traffic in the left lane. Westbound 64 at Bow Avenue and the PSB looks good. Westbound Kingbridge traffic from the Illinois Bank onto Laclede's Landing. There's slight delays this hour. Northbound Route 3 at the Poplar Street Bridge. Expect some delays getting onto the ramps there.
and Lafayette at 44. Those traffic signals are on red flash, and that is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by McDonald's. Enjoy a little daylight savings at McDonald's. Stop in for one of three delicious breakfast extra value meals like Egg McMuffin, hash browns, and small coffee, all for under $3. McDonald's, I'm loving it. Now taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Wednesday. Cloudy, colder, and becoming mostly cloudy by this afternoon. Slight chance for showers with a high in the lower 40s this evening. Mostly cloudy, becoming partly cloudy overnight with a low around 30. Tuesday, not quite as cool, partly cloudy with a high in the lower 50s. Tuesday evening, partly cloudy until early morning, then becoming mostly cloudy with a low in the upper 30s. And then on Wednesday, mostly cloudy skies with a high in the 50s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have clear skies and 37 degrees. Lambert Field is reporting clear skies and 38. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call. That's up next. We'll take another look at your traffic and weather in the bottom of the 7 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brother, tell me, sister. It is time for us to use our power. Please do not beg, hope for power. Nobody is going to give it to you. You were born with power.
Some very sad news for all of you. The people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis. I remember saying that progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. If you pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that the blow made.
But the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it. They struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal. Yet many are denied equal dignity.
And so we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown. My number here is 1-877-920-WGNU. If you want to email me, please do that at revolution@lizbrown.com. If you want to check out some hours that you may have missed, you can do that at whiterosesociety.org. And I'm also iPodded at whiterosesociety.org. So you can get to me. We have much to talk about in this day before the State of the Union. I think it's fascinating as we look at the State of the Union and anticipate the words that are going to be directed towards the challenges that confront this nation. It's already been reported that George W. Bush is going to spend about an hour on the State of the Union address. An hour of time, including applause. And it's remarkable for anybody that has their finger on the pulse, for anybody that is standing next to someone with a pulse. We all would agree that an hour? This is the first national address on prime time, post-Katrina, post-Iraq, post an economy where the median income in this country has decreased. The joblessness rate has jumped from 3.9% to 4.9%. An hour? And despite the fact that the number of families living in poverty has increased from 8.7% to 10.2%, trade deficit doubled, an hour, inflation has gone up, personal bankruptcies have gone up, an hour, consumer debt is an hour? An hour. Including applause. Including applause. You spend more than an hour a night watching ESPN. An hour. You could spend an hour talking about what the promises you made about Katrina. The promises that you were going to fill about Katrina. Well, somebody has to tell the truth. Somebody has to describe the condition of this nation. And we're going to do that this morning by examining one aspect of the state of this nation. I'm going to make a connection between something that a lot of us take for granted. Owning a car and poverty. Many of us take for granted owning a car. And we need to talk about how people of color are less likely to own cars, less likely to escape hurricanes, and less likely to escape poverty. Cars, hurricane, and poverty. Betsy Leander Wright, she's the communications director of United for a Fair Economy. She's joining us from Boston, Massachusetts. Betsy, good morning.
Good morning, Liz.
How are you doing this morning?
I'm great. It's always good to be talking with you.
It's good to have you here. Congratulations to your two senators for standing up for a filibuster.
Yeah, pretty impressive.
Yeah, congratulations.
Oh, yes, huh?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Let's see what happens today. So I'm looking at this report put out by United for Fair Economy. There's a connection between car ownership, hurricanes, and poverty.
Mm-hmm.
Let us in on that.
Well, we were all, of course, horrified by, you know, watching what happened with Katrina, that to see all these people stuck behind, unable to get out of New Orleans and the surrounding areas, and that so many of them were African American and poor, and we started with the question: could that happen elsewhere? Is that the one and only place where there's such a big racial disparity in who can drive away from a disaster? So turns out it is publicly available in every part of the country. You can find out for your town how many people own cars and what their racial breakdown is. So nationally, we found that 7% of white households don't have any cars, any vehicles at all. And for Native Americans, Asians, and Latinos, it's, you know, 13, 15, 17%. It's around, double or more. The numbers, and for African Americans, 24%, almost a quarter of black households in the country have no vehicles.
What's the explanation for that, Betsy?
Money. I think it's money because, of course, there's some isolated areas where if you talk to New York City, people say, oh, you really don't need a car here.
Really do need to factor New York out.
Exactly. That one stands out. There's such amazing public transportation, and
right.
There's no place to put a car in
right.
most neighborhoods there. But in most of the country, because of the disinvestment from public transportation, a car is a necessity of life in most places. there's not good enough public transportation to get to where all the jobs are and all the other important things of life are. And so when people are able to afford it, they mostly do count the car as a necessity of life to buy. So I think that the high poverty rates, this is not that far off from the different poverty rates of the different races. So we think that it's a direct flow from that. And then, okay, so what does that leave you unable to do when you don't have a car? And so we looked in particular at the places in the country where there's been five or more hurricanes in the last 100 years. So that, of course, took us to quite a number of cities in Florida, and New Orleans, of course. But there were some surprises. I'm sitting here in Boston, and Boston is on that list.
I was surprised to see that as well.
Because it's a low threshold, five or more. It's cities of metropolitan areas with 500,000 people or more. So we excluded the smaller areas and looked at just where it would be a huge population affected. And, we snuck in there with five.
Rhode Island, too.
Too. Providence with 15 hurricanes in the last 100 years. I had no idea. And now New York City with 15. Most likely these are not as severe as down south, but the idea of evacuating New York or Boston, for that matter, would be a very bad way to do it. But in New York, a lot of the public transportation is underwater, is underground, so would be flooded out. So it's a scary prospect to think about. But we found dramatic racial disparities in all those areas. Every place, like just picking Miami, 21% of African Americans in Miami don't have a vehicle. So that just imagining what would happen and who would be left behind. Of course, nobody should be left behind, irregardless of race. But in fact, because we started looking into the evacuation plans, most evacuation plans rely very heavily on private vehicles. There's only with institutionalized people such as hospitals and nursing homes do evacuation plans tend to provide buses or whatever. And for people who are not institutionalized but just plain don't have a car, I think it's in most cases very inadequate.
I'm looking at these numbers in Boston. 38% of black people, of black households, do not have vehicles. 38%?
Yeah. Yeah, now we have 33% of all races don't, because we do have public transportation here. We have a subway system. And, some people don't need a car. But white people, who on average have more money, not in all cases, of course, but only 29%. So the average is, there's still that gap of like 10%. And actually, we have other races in Boston that are even more Asian Americans. 45% don't have cars. Native Americans, 43%. Latinos, 41%. So we have other groups of color that are even more vehicle-less.
And don't we also have to look at the... All right, we have the numbers of people of African descent that have no vehicles. Let's take a look at the state of the vehicles that are owned collectively. Can we talk about that?
Yeah, because, of course, there's that stereotype about the, that's as if that's the first thing that that people of color, African-American men in particular, would spend money on. There was the Reagan painting the picture of the quote-unquote welfare queen.
The racist stereotypes.
Yeah, there's a racist stereotype that buying a big fancy Cadillac is like the first thing that happens when a person of color gets a little bit of money. And it turns out to be untrue that, in fact, the value of cars varies by race. And the typical white family's vehicle or vehicles was worth $12,000 in 2001. And African American family typical value is $5,000. So less than half. As far back as we could find the data, for all groups of color, it was less than half the white value. Because you got to keep, if you have less money, you got to keep the car longer, or you got to buy it used or whatever. And of course, some people not having cars at all, that pulls the average down. So the stereotype is just not true. You know, as with everything, of course, it's true of some people. There's some people who flashy car is their priority, which includes some white people, too, especially young people just starting out. I think it can be an exciting thing to get a fancy car, but that's not the reality for most people. Most people are using it for transportation, trying to get to work. And where the jobs are, you're at an increasing disadvantage not to have a car, given the movement of jobs. And we were talking about Boston, where I'm sitting here, when the high-tech boom happened. None of those jobs were in the city. Maybe not zero, but very, very few. They were out on this outer belt of Route 128. And there's no public transportation there. Some of the companies would send a little tiny van, you know, around to the subway stops and pick up a few people who would then be out there, whatever, sweeping up or something. But the bulk of the jobs were people driving from the suburbs to the suburbs, and that's an increasing trend.
That's a huge increasing trend. When you even the minimum wage jobs are moving further and further outside of the major city propers.
Yeah, and a lot of places, the new development, I don't know if you see this where you are, but new development is sprawl. They call it the ex-urban sprawl, where they're building housing developments that really aren't near anything. There's nothing you can walk to. There's no public transportation. And everyone has a car and is just expected to drive to the shopping center, which is also a sprawling thing. So it's just very, very efficient the way that some old cities are built, that residential areas are near jobs and they're near retail, and you can hop on the trolley or you can walk and go get yourself a gallon of milk or go get yourself to work. Biking becomes an option that's also very healthy. And with the exurban sprawl that's developing, that's not possible.
So what is the solution here? I mean, we have – well, wait a minute. Before we get to the solution, let me throw one more thing in there. In terms of the barriers that keep people from – and particularly people of African descent – from car ownership, do we have to factor in things like credit and things like the barriers that keep people from being able to go into a car dealership and purchase a new car the same way that someone else who is not of African descent can?
Absolutely. And study after study has shown that you get, if you're of African descent, you get stuck with a higher interest rate. You don't get the bargains and the discounts in the same way. And sometimes it's just outright blatant discrimination. And sometimes it's, again, are you able to get around and shop around and, you know, travel to go to some place where you're going to get a bargain? What's your credit rating? Can you get the best deal? Can you shop around for the loan, or do you have to take the one offered by the dealership?
And then there's also insurance as well, Betsy. I mean, I live in a community that's redlined. I live in a community that I pay more to live in my community than people on the other side of the city have to pay.
Yeah, absolutely. We have that here, too, that if you're in an inner-city neighborhood, your insurance costs are far more than if you're in the suburbs.
And I'm talking about this is in the city itself.
Within different neighborhoods.
Absolutely.
That could be true in other places, too. I don't actually know that. But, so the cost of owning a car is more from beginning to end. Then it varies how much you need it, you know, varies from place to place, as we were saying also.
So what were some of the other findings that your study found?
Well, none of us were transportation experts. We didn't, what we focus on at United for a Fair Economy is growing economic inequality, whether it's the racial wealth divide growing or the overall divide between all of us and the super rich. So we had to do kind of a crash course on things related to transportation. And so we just noodled around and called people and got a lot of help from the National Center for Disaster Preparedness, which was a wonderful outfit. And they pointed us to this study about missing medical care, in particular for children, because of lack of transportation. It was a national survey done just last year in 2005. And among white families, 2% have missed out on a child's medical care because of transportation problems, but 11% of African-American families and 21% of Latino families have missed out on children's medical care. So this is a factor also in the racial health divide that we see of more preventable diseases and conditions.
Well, we have to take a break here, but when we come back, Betsy, I would like to talk about what does a nation do, and how does our nation compare to other countries? Do other countries, are people left out as a result of natural disasters because they don't have things like vehicles? I'd like to talk about that when we come back. I'm talking to Betsy Leonda Wright, Communications Director of United for a Fair Economy. She's joining us from Boston, Massachusetts. I'm Liz Brown. This is the Wake Up Call. My number here is 1-877-920-WGNU. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We'll be back. Stay with us.
But now I think I'm able to carry on. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gon' come. Oh, yes it will.
Good morning, St. Louis. 31 minutes after the hour, 7 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by McDonald's Restaurants. Northbound 55 between 141 and Rivas Parish. Expect normal traffic. Eastbound 44 from 109 to Guyer looks good. Eastbound 40 from 141 Mason. You have slow traffic there. Northbound 270 from Gravoy to 44. Look for slow traffic in pockets. Westbound 270 from the Canal Bridge all the way to Old Halls Ferry. Nothing to report. Westbound 40 between 170 and McKnight looks good. Eastbound 70 from K to 79. Look for traffic to be flowing freely. Westbound 270 at West Florissant and 170. Look for slight delays. Eastbound 40 at Spady and Lindbergh. Look for slow traffic there as well. Westbound 5570 from 4th Street onto the PSB. Look for slow traffic in the left lane. Westbound 64 at Bow Avenue and the Poplar Street Bridge. Expect normal traffic for your 7:30 commute. Westbound Kingbridge traffic from the gravel pit all the way into Laclede's Landing. It is starting to stack up a bit. Northbound Route 3, those approaches onto the Poplar Street Bridge, you can expect delays. Lafayette 44, look for traffic signals on Red Flash, and there's an accident at North Florissant and Pleasant. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by McDonald's Restaurants. Enjoy a little daylight savings at McDonald's. Stop in for one of three delicious breakfast extra value meals, like an Egg McMuffin, hash browns, and a small coffee, all for under $3. McDonald's, I'm loving it. Now taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Wednesday. For today, colder, partly cloudy, in the morning becoming mostly cloudy throughout the day. Slight chance for showers with a high in the lower 40s. This evening, mostly cloudy till early morning, then becoming partly cloudy with a low around 30. Tuesday, not quite as cool, partly cloudy, high in the mid-50s. Tuesday evening, partly cloudy until early morning, then becoming mostly cloudy with a low in the upper 30s. And on Wednesday, mostly cloudy with a high in the 50s. Currently at the studios of AM 920, WGNU, we have 38 degrees. Lambert Field is also reporting 38 degrees, both under clear skies. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call. It's up next. We'll take another look at your news, traffic, and weather in the 8 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
This is Dr. Laura Schlesinger. Join me every Monday through Friday from 2 to 4 on Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920 WGNU, and get a new attitude.
It'll change everything you know about AM 920. It's coming to WGNU Monday, January 30th.
Is the IRS ruining your life? Are you afraid of losing everything? You can end the despair you feel right now. Get ready to write down an important phone number you're going to need to solve your IRS nightmare. The number is 800-376-9913.
Hello, I'm John Harris, president of J.K. Harris & Company, the nation's largest tax representation firm.
IRS problems have a way of ruining every aspect of your life if you let them. Our former IRS agents and tax professionals have successfully negotiated settlements for thousands of our clients, saving them millions of dollars.
According to IRS statistics, the average settlement for accepted offers and compromise was between 12 and 15 cents per tax dollar owed, which means you could qualify to reduce your tax debt by as much as 85%. If you owe the IRS back taxes, call J.K. Harris at 800-376-9913. You may qualify to dramatically reduce your tax debt. Call 800-376-9913. That's 800-376-9913.
He's back.
By popular demand and because it's so right on time, we're putting President Bush back on the couch. Yes, Dr. Justin Frank returns to the next edition of Mondays at 9 for another analysis of the chief executive. Is the domestic spying issue indicative of a controlling personality? Does the president completely depend on Dick Cheney, or is he merely a puppet deciding who pulls the strings? So many more issues have cropped up that we decided another session was in order. Don't miss Dr. Justin Frank, author of Bush on the Couch, our special guest on the next edition of Mondays at 9.
Big Brother is watching, and we're watching Big Brother. It's the award-winning wake-up call with Liz Frank.
Every ghetto, every city, and suburban place I've been, make me recall my days in the New Jerusalem. You know it's hot, don't forget what you got. Looking back. You know it's hot, don't forget what you got.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown. My guest this morning is Betsy Leander Wright. She's the communications director of United for a Fair Economy. She's joining us from Boston, Massachusetts. Betsy, welcome back.
Thanks, Liz.
And I asked you a couple of questions on the way out.
Yeah, about other countries, how they've handled transportation differently than we do. We found this one story, and we were looking at the different reactions to hurricanes. We found this one story about Hurricane Adrian hitting El Salvador in 2005, where they organized neighborhood emergency committees to figure out how they were going to get each person out. And so they thought about old people and people who had a car, who didn't have a car, and they matched people up, and not one life was lost.
It's my understanding that that is what happens in Cuba as well.
Yes.
That there's this massive neighbor-to-neighbor plan like that that makes certain that people are safe.
Yeah, they got through. This last hurricane season was just ferocious, and there they are right in the path. And they had, I don't remember which hurricane it was, that no lives were lost. So, when I read that Hurricane Adrian story, I actually started crying thinking about Katrina. I thought, can't you just picture that? There must have been empty places in the cars that fled.
Absolutely.
And why wouldn't people take each other? Well, they probably didn't know each other. It was a pretty segregated neighborhood, you know. The flooded areas were only 18% white, whereas the dry areas were 49% white. So the people had already separated themselves out, but the high ground was the expensive real estate because everybody knows it's underwater, you know. The low ground is the cheaper real estate. So you've got neighborhoods where most people don't have cars and neighborhoods where everybody does, and it pretty much splits by race, and neighborhoods where you have to get out and neighborhoods where it's more optional. So why couldn't we have that kind of solidarity in this country? What keeps us from feeling like our neighbors are our neighbors, our people to worry about, and we just have this terrible estrangement from each other. So I think that's one thing to think about. There's so many things that should be done differently, and a lot of cities are now scurrying to revamp their evacuation plans in the light of Katrina. But some of it is, cars are never going to be the complete solution. Cars, buses, anything that goes on the roads, because look at the times that it's turned into, like with Hurricane Rita in Houston. The whole area turns into like a parking lot. because the roads are just clogged. You can turn all the highways so that they're one way only and people are going on what's usually the wrong direction.
But nevertheless, people are left behind because they don't have cars.
That's right.
Even
That's
if,
right.
I mean, being trapped in a traffic jam on the highway is a better place to be than to be up on a roof.
That's right. That's
with
right.
the water raging beneath you. So the problem still remains, even
That's
though
right.
cars are not the perfect solution or the absolute solution
That's right.
to
That's
this.
Right.
So what is the solution?
Well, there's the long term and there's the short term. Of course, there's many things about zoning and development, you know, non-sprawl development like they've tried to do in Portland, Oregon, that are things that I'm not an expert in. And, of course, at United for a Fair Economy, the part we focus on is the solution is closing the racial wealth divide, that this has got to stop. We've been sort of waiting to hear the numbers on how the size of the difference in net worth among the races or among people between the top 1% and the rest of us, too, that data only comes out every 3 years. And we've been sort of waiting to see what happened between 2001 and 2004, the Federal Reserve Survey. And it'll come out in detail later this spring. But they did leak out one number, which is a really startling number. We figured the racial wealth divide was going to have grown a little bit because white people are more likely to own stocks and bonds, and those have risen since 2001, which was during the recession. The survey was taken during the recession when the stocks had fallen. So we knew the racial wealth divide was gonna widen, but it appears to be at a really startling amount. That black median net worth changed not at all from 2001 to 2004 in the so-called recovery. It stayed right at very close to $20,000, whereas white net worth, the median, rose 6% after inflation, and it's now up to $136,000.
Has that ever happened before?
Just data surge?
Yes.
I'm not sure. I do have those numbers, but I don't have them right in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
It's been most of the 3 year stretches, the racial wealth divide has widened. It did narrow for a little while in the 90s. And it follows things like employment, unemployment, because people do save. When you get ahead, despite all the stereotypes about poor people and African-American people, that when people earn more than they need to live, people do save. And so whenever poverty drops and employment rises and income rises, then savings and net worth also rise, which is great. So that did happen to some extent in the 90s. But now we've had 5 years in a row, as I heard you say in your introduction, when the typical family's income has dropped. And that's been true in every racial category, but it's falling faster for people of color.
So what do we do? I mean,
if you want, if a government has the political will to raise people up from poverty into the middle class, there are tried and true methods that work. We know this from the New Deal and the GI Bill after World War II. You put out a government-sponsored ladder of opportunity for people to climb. So you say, okay, college should not be so expensive. For more and more decent-paying jobs now, you need a 2 or 4 year degree. Let's make it really cheap. Stop this thing with just loans, 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 which is that's what we've switched. The federal aid has switched from more grants to more loans. And let's make the Pell Grants grow with the rate of tuition or faster. And let's get them to the people who really aren't getting the college opportunities. First-time home ownership. There's lots of people who would love to not be renters and would love to be homeowners. Look at the white rate. It's over three-quarters of households have on their own homes now, and it still hasn't hit 50% of African Americans or any group of color. So let's make it really cheap. Become a first-time homeowner, as we did for the white returning GIs after World War II. We made it
was really, 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 really cheap.
That's right. You get a VA mortgage, and your income may be fairly low, but then you have to have the credit on fair terms. And you then, of course, have to have the decent-paying jobs to pay the mortgage, because a lot of people get a home and then lose it to foreclosure. But so So you need an affordable loan, and then you need work that pays more than just subsistence. And that employers are getting away with murder in this country. The amounts that they're starting to be able to pay, with the minimum wage falling farther and farther behind inflation. So raising the minimum wage up to a living wage and putting some muscle into the anti-discrimination enforcement, into the labor rights enforcement. You got to be able to form a union. If you vote one in, the company can't go firing you and whatever. The employers can't get away with discrimination. And right now...
And Betsy, we have to bring this to an end. I need you to, if you could, let people know where they can get a copy of this report.
Yes, on the website for United for a Fair Economy, which is www.faireconomy.org. You can click on Stalling the Dream, and it's right there on the homepage. And you can download a PDF of the full report. If you have trouble doing that, just get in touch with us from the website. You can get the emails and phone numbers. And I would love to hear from any of your listeners.
Betsy, thank you so much. As always, it's a pleasure having you on the Wake Up Call.
It's always so good to talk to you, Liz.
Take care, and congratulations again on your senators.
Thank you.
All right, take care now.
Bye-bye.
Listen, folks, this is Liz Brown, the Wake Up Call. I'll be back right after this break. Stay with me.
News update is brought to you this hour by
Seven Signs Masonry. Whatever your masonry needs, they do all brickwork. These are the best hands in the business. Seven Signs Masonry, 618-338-2871. That's 618-338-2871. Seven Signs Masonry.
This is your wake-up call global news update. Dateline Jerusalem. An Israeli official says that Hamas lawmakers who were elected last week will not be allowed to travel freely between the Gaza Strip and the West Bank. Assistant Defense Minister Shaul Mofaz says in an interview that Israel will not provide any assistance to an organization bent on destroying its country. The United States has gone on record saying that it will cut financial aid to the Palestinian movement if the Hamas organization does not renounce violence. Unrest broke out in Palestinian areas over the weekend following the Hamas victory. Most of the tension seems to be coming from followers of the Fatah party, which did not fare as well as expected in last week's vote. Hamas leaders say they are going to ask Fatah members to join them in forming a national unity government. And Dateline Kansas City. The state of Kansas is one of a few states that has adopted a new measure which could increase your utility bill. Other utilities in other states are now pushing for this same legislation that permits one utility company to charge its customers for the utility bills that go unpaid by customers of other utility companies in the same state. It's basically an expansion of the charges that are on your bill labeled cost of gas riders or purchased gas adjustments. The utility companies have decided they cannot afford to keep writing off unpaid bills, and it also gives them bad PR to keep asking for rate increases. This move allows them to recover their bad debt costs quicker and in near entirety. The justification is the wording, recovery of wholesale gas costs. Critics say this policy gives utilities little reason to make any effort to collect anything, since they can now just add it as part of good-paying customers' bills. Furthermore, consumers do not get any additional service or benefit for the extra money they have to shell out. And will the same argument be made for utilities to offset other types of expenses like gasoline for fleet vehicles or health insurance for employees? This is your wake-up call global news update, brought to you by
Seven Signs Masonry. Whatever your masonry needs, they do all brickwork. These are the best hands in the business. Seven Signs Masonry, 618-338-2871. That's 618-338-2871. Seven Signs Masonry.
Before you go to the movies, go to Radio Free St. Louis. Find out what's worth seeing and what's not worth the bother. Join Dave Lenahan and Mark Glass for What's Good New at the Movies, a regular feature of Today's Solutions, Friday afternoons at 4:10 on Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920 WGNU. Also online at www.blacktie-stlewis.com.
It's the biggest change at WGNU in 30 years. And it's coming Monday, January 30th.
Before you go to the movies, go to Radio Free St. Louis. Find out what's worth seeing and what's not worth the bother. Join Dave Lenahan and Mark Glass for What's Good New at the Movies, a regular feature of Today's Solutions, Friday afternoons at 4:10 on Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920 WGNU. Also online at www.blacktie-stlewis.com.
He's back.
By popular demand and because it's so right on time, we're putting President Bush back on the couch. Yes, Dr. Justin Frank returns to the next edition of Mondays at 9 for another analysis of the chief executive. Is the domestic spying issue indicative of a controlling personality? Does the president completely depend on Dick Cheney, or is he merely a puppet deciding who pulls the strings? So many more issues have cropped up that we decided another session was in order. Don't miss Dr. Justin Frank, author of Bush on the Couch, our special guest on the next edition of Mondays at 9.
Real life, on the cutting edge. It's the award-winning Wake-Up Call with Liz Brown.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. Don't forget the we have so much stuff to talk about. 454-0400 is the phone number. 454-6609 is the fax. And in the next hour, because there's so much stuff percolating in Washington, D.C., it's easy for things to fall off of the out of target range. We have, of course, the State of the Union address that's coming up tomorrow night. We also have, of course, the filibuster issue coming up tomorrow, or coming up today, actually. We can't forget about the election of the Senate House leader. I mean, Senate House leader. The House leader to replace, of course, indicted House leader and convicted House leader. So we have the election going on in the House, and so we have to keep our eye on that, particularly since the fact particularly since Roy Blunt is from Missouri. And we're going to have in the next hour Melanie Sloan. She's the executive director of CREW. She's going to be talking to us about all of the specific concerns that you should have about Roy Blunt. Jobs for family members, money from Abram Hoff, money from Tom DeLay. So you can't afford to miss that, particularly since we have the local connection. Melanie Sloan, with the executive director of CREW, is going to be joining us in the next hour. And, of course, in the 9 o'clock hour, we're going to put Bush back on the couch, kicking and screaming as we talk about Bush post-Katrina. Bush post-Iraq, Bush pre-Iran, Bush post-Hamas, Bush post-extreme, extraordinary gas prices. The last time that we had him on was in October, and again, it's time to put him back on the couch. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. And my toll-free long-distance number is 1-877-920-WGNU. You need to get up. You need to get to me. And I really know that we need to have a contest here. I think we need to have a contest. I think that we need to have a contest on how many times George Bush is going to use the word terrorist in his speech tonight or tomorrow night. I'm putting it at a dozen, and I'm putting 9/11 at six times. But terrorists, because we've got the whole Hamas thing, we have the Iran thing, and the old, you know, oldie but goodie Iraq situation. And then we also have the domestic spying issue, spying on American citizens by our government. So I may up it. I may up it. I think we might have, maybe we'll have 12 to 15. 12 to 15. 12 to 15. 454-0400 is my phone number. Get to me. Eric.
Yes.
Yes, good morning.
Hello. You know, I just saw the chase on TV by some guy was running from the police. He was driving a van, running away. Me and my wife was watching, and we went from rooting for the police to rooting for police to finally get them. And then when the Channel 2 News helicopter had this all on tape, and the police chased them and got them on the ground, they start punching and kicking them. But they try to justify that. Okay. They try to justify that by he's supposed to be resisting. But even when he got handcuffed, they were still pushing his head down to the ground and everything else.
I haven't had a chance to see it yet, Eric. I know that we've gotten many, many, many calls here into the station. We had the television on a few minutes ago. I didn't have a chance to see it. I'm going to take a look at it to see. This is something that happened right here in St. Louis, right?
Yes.
All right. And we also have to juxtapose that action against the attitude of the current police chief saying that they're that justifying an all-white police class. We have to juxtapose that next to, of course, the police residency rule. We have to juxtapose that next to a need for a civilian oversight board. We have to juxtapose that against all of those issues, because we have a police chief that said that, well, black people don't want to be police officers anyway. So all of these things contribute to an atmosphere where police feel justified in doing things like this.
This is not why I'm a horrible. I was horrible about Channel 2 News. Because the first time they showed the whole thing, the second time they wouldn't show it. They cut it off.
Isn't that interesting? Isn't that interesting? All right now. Thanks for your call. 454-0400 is my phone number. Mac.
Fine, how you doing, Miss Brown?
I'm outstanding.
I'm going 20 times on protecting American citizens.
Oh, he never uses that phrase.
He used something about protect America or protect the citizens.
Nah, his catchphrase is terrorism, I'm telling you. I'm telling you, his catchphrase
is
terrorism.
You'll be seeing that clip. That happened out on Pleasant here in the city. They chased the guy from out in the county. Some of the St. Louis police got involved, like you said. And there was one guy just standing up on his feet kicking the man.
There's a St. Louis police officer?
Yeah, he was standing up. I think that was a St. Louis police, but they were chased from out in the county down to the city, down on Pleasant. And somehow the fineness got involved, and one standing up kicking the man, not even putting his hand on him at first, just standing up kicking him. Why, it's about four or five of them had him on the ground.
The last caller, Eric, said that the full tape is not being shown on television.
Well, Channel 2 News showed a good clip of it.
Are they continuing?
Channel 2 did show a better clip than Channel 5.
Uh-huh.
I think they tried to keep out some of it, but Channel 2 did had the helicopter right over the top of it, and they showed a pretty good clip what was going
we'll
on.
We'll see what the rest of the day brings us.
And they said that's what you call that dribbling that gets, you know.
It's called lawlessness.
Yeah.
Thanks for your call.
Okay.
454-0400 is my phone number. It's the same rush that criminals get, you know. It's lawlessness. You know, a lot of beat people and blame it on your hormones. Since when? You know, you're not allowed to do that. 454-0400 is my phone number. I'm Liz Brown. This is the wake-up call. You need to get up. You need to get to me. I'll be back after the news. Stay with me.
You were born with
some very sad news for all of you and people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight. Remember? I remember saying that progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound. That's the low mace.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air.
That matter most. It's AM 920 WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Daria Albinger. Now comes the hard part for the families of ABC's Bob Woodruff and Doug Vogt, The Waiting. The co-anchor of World News Tonight and his Canadian cameraman are at Landstuhl Army Medical Center in Germany. They are heavily sedated as they're treated for wounds they received in Iraq. More from ABC's Linda Alvin in Germany.
The next couple of days are going to be critical. Both men are going to be in and out of surgery to clean their wounds. Doctors here are saying very, very little other than the injuries that they sustained were very serious. It's too early to give any kind of prognosis, but they're going to be here for a couple of days to make sure that their condition is stable enough for them to be transported back to the United States.
ABC News medical editor Dr. Tim Johnson on the main problem with this type of injury.
The big enemy in head injury cases right from the start and even as they continue care in this country is brain swelling. And they deal with this in various ways by surgery to relieve the pressure and with various medications that can help reduce brain swelling.
Both men are in serious but stable condition. This is the day that thousands of former Enron employees have been waiting for. The trial of former executives Kenneth Lay and Jeff Skilling begins. More from ABC's Jim Ryan in Houston.
It's being called one of the most important trials in U.S. business history. And the thousands of Enron employees who lost their jobs, their retirement accounts, and millions in bad company stock will be watching.
The common theme among employees I've talked to is that they're glad it's finally going to trial. They hope that it gets over fairly quickly and they hope that the jury reaches the correct and just decisions.
Rod Jordan heads a coalition of former Enron workers suing Ken Lay and Jeff Skilling once the criminal trial is over later this year. Jim Ryan, ABC News, Houston.
Bosses, take note. A survey by Salary.com finds most people aren't as happy on the job as you might think. Then again, it also says that it would only take a small raise to make most of them smile. This is ABC News.
More coffee, mister?
Yes, please. Oh, boy.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Hot coffee all over you. Let me get some paper towels and some cold water. Are you all right?
Why, I'm just fine, young lady. It's just scalding coffee.
Mister, you must be gelling.
That's why I'm not yelling, even though there's considerable redness and swelling.
More gel, more gelling. New and improved Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles. More cushioning, totally outrageous comfort. To start gelling like never before, see the doctor, Dr. Scholl's.
Waitress, how about some more coffee?
Former Nesquik powder users are telling us why they switched to rich chocolate Ovaltine.
My girls don't like to drink white milk, and the only way I could get them to drink it was with chocolate milk. I'd seen on TV that Ovaltine has extra vitamins in it. Now I'm using it, and my girls love the taste. And they're drinking their milk, getting their calcium, and all the vitamins from Ovaltine. I stopped using Nesquik because it just doesn't have the vitamins that Ovaltine has.
Ovaltine. Try it for the nutrition. Keep buying it for the taste.
More Ovaltine, please!
So it's just a little email there, a peek at a website there. The boss will never know, right? No, and he's watching more than you might realize. Here's ABC's Jim Hickey.
If you think the email you send from the company computer is private, Think again.
Employers in the United States have the right to read, review, and even publish what you've written.
Roger Mattis is CEO of Inboxer, an internet company which has published online thousands of emails written by former Enron employees.
Anything you write in an email can be read by somebody else.
Mattis says use common sense when sending emails from work.
If it's something that you don't want someone else to know, don't print it.
Jim Hickey, ABC News.
Reese Witherspoon and Philip Seymour Hoffman are another step closer to Oscars. They won Best Actress and Actor at last night's Screen Actors Guild Awards. Both played real-life characters. She, June Carter Cash, and Walk the Line, and he, the title character in Capote. The Oscar nominations are tomorrow. Daria Albinger, ABC News.
Report of WGNU News. This update is brought to you by the Illinois Lottery. I'm Peyton Colston reporting. The Illinois State Police and the Granite City Police Department have issued an Amber Alert after a girl was apparently abducted by her grandmother Sunday. The grandmother is currently free on bond on a murder charge and the child is considered to be in danger. Michaela Christie, 5 years old, a white female, 41 pounds, with brown hair and brown eyes, was last seen wearing a black T-shirt with pink writing, khaki capri pants, and no shoes. The suspect is Deborah McFadden, 44 years old, white female, 5'4", 115 pounds, with brown hair and brown eyes. She was last seen wearing light blue jeans, a gray sweatshirt, and a black jacket. She has her belongings and so may have changed clothes. The suspect vehicle is a 2000 Silver Mercury Sable with Texas license number Z25DWM. Police believe the two may be headed to Texas. Anyone with information is asked to call authorities. In other news, Michael Anthony Taylor is scheduled to be executed Wednesday morning unless a stay currently in place remains. Taylor's attorney, John Simon, says a federal judge issued a preliminary injunction last month based on the defense's challenge to lethal injection in Missouri. State officials have filed an application with the 8th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals to vacate that injunction. Taylor and his co-defendant Roderick Nunley were convicted of the 1989 rape and murder of Ann Harrison in Kansas City. The St. Louis Regional Crime Commission says it's set to make a major announcement this morning. The commission will outline a new region-wide program to prevent and solve crime. The announcement comes on the heels of 2005 crime statistics that showed increases in murder and rape in the city of St. Louis. In Jefferson City, lawmakers are debating Governor Matt Blunt's proposal to sell the Missouri Higher Education Loan Authority. Blunt's plan calls for turning MOHELA into a public-private partnership and using the money from this sale to fund improvements at state colleges and universities. The governor and the plan's supporters say the move could bring in up to $425 million for higher education. But opponents, including Democratic State Senator Pat Doherty of St. Louis, call the plan unnecessary and unfair to Missouri students. And finally, thanks to a grant from the Illinois Environmental Protection Agency, an historic lake in the Metro East could see restoration work this year. The $75,000 grant will go toward restoring LeClaire Lake in Edwardsville. The lake was listed on the National Register of Historic Places in 1979. It suffered from erosion in recent years and has become so shallow that it's possible to wade across the entire lake. That's WGNU News for this hour, brought to you by the Illinois Lottery. New, the Illinois Lottery's Ticket for the Cure. 100% of the proceeds support the fight against breast cancer. Play Ticket for the Cure today, because when you play, everybody wins. I'm Peyton Colston with WGNU News.
Good morning, St. Louis. 7 minutes after the hour of 8 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by RE/MAX. Northbound 55 from 141 to Rivas Parish. Expect normal traffic. Eastbound 44 from 109 to Guyer. Looks good. Eastbound 40 from 141 to Mason Road. You've got slow traffic. Northbound 270 at Tesson Ferry all the way to 44. Stop and go traffic in pockets. Westbound 40 from Clayton Skinker to Hanley. Expect delays. Eastbound 70 between 79 and Cave Springs. Expect delays. Westbound 270 from New Halls Ferry to 170. Slight delay going on there. Eastbound 40 from Ballast to Lindbergh. Look for slow traffic. Eastbound 40 from McKnight to 170. Look for delays there. Westbound 70 between 270 and Earth City Expressway is still sluggish. Westbound 5570 at 64. Look for delays. Westbound 64 at 5570. Look for slow traffic there as well. Westbound Kingbridge traffic at Gravel Pit all the way in. Cleeds Landing looks good. And northbound Route 3 from 8th Street on to the approaches of the Poplar Street Bridge. Look for very heavy volume going on there. There's an accident at North Florissant and Pleasant. It is on the shoulder. Bowles at Highway N. There's a report of traffic lights not working. And Marcus Avenue at Lexington. There's a report of an injury accident involving a pedestrian. That is a look at this hour's traffic. And this hour's traffic is a service of REMAX. When it comes to real estate sales, REMAX outsells the competition. Number one in transactions per agent, REMAX above the crowd. Now taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Wednesday. Colder, partly cloudy in the morning, becoming mostly cloudy by this afternoon. A slight chance for showers, a high in the lower 40s. This evening, mostly cloudy until early morning, then becoming partly cloudy with a low in the 30s. For Tuesday, not quite as cool, partly cloudy, a high in the lower 50s. Tuesday evening, partly cloudy till early morning, then becoming mostly cloudy with a low in the upper 30s. Then on Wednesday, mostly cloudy skies will continue. They're expecting a high in the 50s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we're hovering at 39 degrees. Lambert Field has 39 degrees and sunny skies as well. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call. That's up next. We'll take another look at your traffic and weather in the bottom of the 8 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brother, how can you listen? I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brother. It is time for us to use our power. Please do not ask us for power. Nobody is going to give it to you. You were born with power.
Some very sad news for all of you. The people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis. I will never say that progress is being made. You stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below, that the low knee.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air.
But the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it.
They struggle against the common enemies of man: tyranny, poverty, disease, war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal. Yet many are denied equal
treatment. So we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. I'm Liz Brown. 454-0400 is my phone number, 1-877-920-WGNU is my toll-free long-distance number. And if you want to email me, do that at revolution@lizbrown.com. This show is archived daily at whiterosesociety.org. So if you've missed an hour, go get an hour at whiterosesociety.org. My goodness gracious, there's so much stuff to talk about. I don't want any of this, any of the things that are going on to fall off the radar, to get out, get to move beyond our target range. There's a lot of stuff going on. And I had complained in the past about the Democrats being so quiet, so silent on the issue of the election of a person to replace indicted House Majority Leader Tom DeLay. And someone brought it to my attention that, well, the reason why they're being so quiet is that they're hoping that Representative Roy Blunt, replaces him because he's the poster child for, it's like, push me, pull you. You get both of them. It's like having Tom DeLay there. And we need to talk about this. We need to talk about the habits, the practices, the policies of Representative Roy Blunt, particularly as he pursues his efforts to for job advancement. To facilitate that conversation, I have joining me from Washington, D.C., Executive Director of CRU, Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics, Melanie Sloan. Melanie, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
Good. How are you today?
I'm outstanding. So, job advancement by Roy Blunt. More money.
That's it. He is, you know, he rivals Tom DeLay for his unethical behavior. And the reason that he is ahead in this race right now is because he, like DeLay, knows how to spread his money around to his colleagues. And that's what gets them, that's what gets you a vote for majority leader.
Well, let's talk about before he was majority leader. He was majority whip, right?
Right.
Okay. What did he do like hours after he became majority whip?
Just hours after he was named Majority Whip, he attempted to secretly insert a provision into pending Homeland Security legislation that would have benefited Philip Morris at the expense of its competitors. Philip Morris, which is a division of Altria, is Representative Blunt's largest campaign contributor. And within days of the announcement of his new job as whip, Altria donated $32,400 to Blunt's Political Action Committee. And in addition, Blunt was dating Philip Morris's lobbyist, Abigail Perlman, who he later married at the time he inserted the provision. And he also has a son, Andrew, who's a lobbyist for Philip Morris.
Now, is any of this illegal?
It would be illegal if you could prove what we call the quid pro quo. If we could prove that he inserted the legislative provision in return for that $32,400, that in fact might be, that would be a bribe, and that would be illegal.
But it sure is stinky.
But it sure is stinky, and it's the kind of thing that the House Ethics Committee, if they ever did anything at all, would want to look at.
So, okay, that was in 2002. 2003 and UPS.
Right. At that time, he introduced a legislative provision that would have benefited UPS and FedEx by preventing competition from a foreign-owned carrier, shipper, DHL. Within months of inserting the provision, he received almost $20,000 in campaign contributions for the two companies. And again, his son, Andrew, was a lobbyist for UPS.
And but if there's a bigger problem with illegality with that as well, or is it the same as it
was? It's the same thing. It could be a bribe. If, in fact, he inserted the provision in return for the campaign contribution, that would be a bribe. We would need, though, somebody to actually come in and testify that, yes, that's why he put the legislative provision in. And right now, I think the public integrity section of the Department of Justice seems to have its hands full, and I'm not sure that they're looking to start investigating any new members of Congress.
Now, in terms of, we can go back to 2000. In the presidential campaign, Blunt also participated in a money laundering scheme in 2000.
Yeah, this was a really elaborate scheme, and he was involved in it with former House Majority Leader Tom DeLay. The scheme was designed to hide the source and use of funds that had been solicited for the purpose of financing all the parties that the Republicans were holding at the Republican National Convention. Blunt and DeLay raised more money than they needed for the parties and then diverted almost $100,000 of that money to the Missouri Republican Party to help finance Representative Blunt's other son, Matt, his campaign for Secretary of State. And by the way, Matt Blunt is now the governor of Missouri.
Yeah, we know.
I'm sorry, at first. That, too, could well violate some federal regulations, as well as House rules prohibiting conduct that does not reflect credibly on the House. That's, you know, a lot of these things, even if they don't rise to the level of bribery, probably violate House rules, very, you know, nearly certainly violate House rules. And a functioning House Ethics Committee would take action about this. That's why when the Republicans are saying now, you know, they're the party of reform on this, on lobbying reform, and they care about ethics, it's just a laughable thing because they're talking about making Roy Blunt majority leader when his ethics problems rival Tom DeLay's.
Well, what is the Ethics Committee doing?
Nothing.
With regard to the, let's just limit it to Blunt. What are they doing in terms of investigating any of these issues with Blunt?
Not a single thing.
Can we back up just a minute, Melanie? Because I want to go back to, okay, the 2002, hours after he was named the majority whip, and he attempted to insert this legislation. How unusual was it that he attempted to do it, time aside, despite the fact that it was only hours into it? How unusual was it that he was trying to do that?
Well, it's not unusual that members try to stick in provisions, you know, in the last minute into bills. But even this provision, it was too much for the Republican leadership. It was Tom DeLay who pulled it out.
Mm.
You know, and you, for you to have Tom DeLay to be the one to say your ethics are our ethics are savvy, you know you have a problem.
That's a big deal.
That's a big deal.
That's a really big deal. Let's go to the family connection, because you know, I guess if they were going to give awards for Father of the Year of taking care of your kids, he would definitely get a Father of the Year award for hooking his kids up.
He sure would. He has made sure his sons are, you know, financially well taken care of. And unfortunately, that's not really what you're supposed to be doing when you're in Congress.
Talk to us about his son and his daughter.
I mean, it's actually two sons that I'm aware of. He has Andrew Blunt and Matt Blunt.
Right.
And it's, you know, really Matt Blunt. Most of his big campaign contributors all along have been Roy Blunt's campaign contributors first. Roy Blunt has funneled money illegally. The Missouri State Ethics Commission even found a violation of the way Roy Blunt was funneling money to his son, his son's campaigns. And Andrew Blunt, who just, you know, a couple years out of law school, ends up with the clients of Philip Morris and UPS. Now, I'll just tell you that those are some of the, you know, top clients any lobbyist would want to have because of the kind of money that they generate. And usually somebody just 2 years out of law school with no prior experience is not becoming the lobbyist for Philip Morris or for UPS.
And it's not just those two. There's some other huge companies.
Right. He's a lobbyist for a lot of companies now, and it's all, again, thanks to his father's connections.
And then it doesn't stop there, because like father, like son, like father, or father, son, I don't know which one it is, but after we got a governor by the name of Blunt, Andrew's clients also increased.
Right. It's quite a family affair they have going on. And, you know, you would think that Andrew Blunt would be, you know, the last job, frankly, that he should have is a lobbyist, lobbying either in the state of Missouri or federally, when your father and brother are both top, you know, officials in both the state and the federal government.
Because he has Ameren UE, he has SBC, he has BNSF, he has the Missouri Auto Dealers Association, the Missouri Hospital Association, Kraft Food, Miller Brewing, and Philip Morris and UPS.
Yeah, it's astonishing, isn't it?
It is truly, truly astonishing. And I got to ask this question, is any of this illegal?
No.
Why?
That's what I think, you know, somebody who I'll probably misquote a little, said, the scandal in Washington isn't what's illegal, it's what's legal.
What about his daughter? How did he hook his daughter up?
You know, I'm sorry, but I don't know. I guess you're going to teach me something.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I'm just, if the sons and the daughters have that kind of connections, I know that the daughter is an attorney in Missouri, but she also is registered as a lobbyist.
Well, you know what? We're going to have to check into her, because she is not someone I've looked at.
So why did Crew file an ethics complaint, and who did you file an ethics complaint with?
Well, first I'll tell you what we did was we wrote an ethics complaint, because
okay.
We can't file it.
Okay.
One of the rules that the House has that protects all its members, it's a very cozy arrangement they have, is only members of Congress can file complaints against each other. No outsiders can file complaints, which has been an incredible thing. You know, we have another complaint out there pending against a guy named Bob Ney from Ohio. He's going to probably be indicted shortly, but we've had an ethics complaint against him for a year, but we couldn't get anyone to file it. But anyway, we thought it was important that somebody should be filing an ethics complaint against Roy Blunt. All of the kind of things that we've been talking about are things that the Ethics Committee surely ought to be looking at. So we prepared the ethics complaint thinking, okay, well, you know, a member of Congress maybe doesn't have time to sit there and prepare this kind of complaint themselves. Here it is. We'll do it. We'll do all the work for you. And then we released it publicly to say, okay, now we need a member of Congress to file this. Because if they want to take our complaint, they can. If they say that it was written in good faith, they can forward it to the Ethics Committee, and the Ethics Committee would be forced to investigate.
That's any member of Congress?
Any member of Congress.
Any member of Congress can do this?
Yes.
Why hasn't any member done this?
Because there's this thing called the ethics truce, and for the past about 9 years now, there's been an agreement between both parties that no member of Congress will file a complaint, an ethics complaint, against a member of the other party. The only time this truce has been broken was by former Representative Chris Bell in 2004 when he filed the ethics complaint against Tom DeLay, and we wrote that for him here at CRU. And Bell did that because he was on his way out. He had been redistricted by DeLay's shenanigans in Texas, and he'd lost his seat. And he didn't care what the Democratic leadership thought. He filed it anyway. But I'll tell you, he took a lot of heat from Nancy Pelosi, the House Minority Leader, and from other members of the leadership, and it was not pleasant. And I think a lot of people watched what happened to Chris Bell, a lot of members of Congress, and thought, you know, I'm not going to buck the leadership and do that.
But he was on his way out. What did they do to him?
They just made his life really difficult. They made it unpleasant. For example, there was, right after he'd filed it, there was a Democratic caucus meeting, and he wanted to get up and speak about it and tell people about it, and Nancy Pelosi refused to let him talk about it.
Well, Nancy Pelosi, she's a Democrat, right?
So I hear.
And she refused to allow a Democrat to talk about an ethics complaint that he filed against a Republican.
That's right.
This is just la-la land.
It is. And now, you know, you'll hear when asked directly about this ethics truce by reporters, Ms. Pelosi denies that there is such a truce. But the fact of the matter is, no ethics complaint has been filed in the entire Abramoff scandal, for example. There has been no ethics complaint filed against anybody. And, you know, you can't find a House member to do it, and that's because the leadership is saying, no complaints, we're not going to do that. I find her just so disingenuous because routinely she'll send letters or something. She sent a letter a couple weeks ago to Dennis Hastert saying, Dennis Hastert, you should make the Speaker Hastert, you should tell the Ethics Committee to investigate some of these Abramoff-related scandals. Well, she didn't need to write a letter to Dennis Hastert. What she needed to do was file a complaint with the House Ethics Committee, and that would have forced an investigation.
Tell us about the connection between Blunt and Abramoff.
Yeah, that was the one thing I forgot to tell you earlier. He was part of a letter that was signed by Speaker of the House Hastert, Majority Leader Tom DeLay, and Deputy Whip Eric Cantor, as well, and then Roy Blunt. So that's the top Republican leadership in the House all wrote a letter to the Secretary of Interior, Gail Norton, in favor of a particular view of gambling that would have benefited one of Abramoff's Indian tribes that had a casino, the Louisiana Coushatta. The Louisiana Coushatta tribe didn't want the Jenna band to be able to form another casino. So Abramoff got these four top leaders to write a letter to Gail Norton. Now, let me just tell you, none of those four members, by the way, had any interest in Louisiana or had staked out much of a position on this Indian gambling stuff before. But suddenly, they're all suddenly writing this letter to Gail Norton. And it turns out that Blunt also signed on to two other letters to Gail Norton on behalf of Jack Abramoff's clients. And in return, he received campaign contribution from Abramoff. He also helped Jack Abramoff with his clients with the Marianas Islands. The Marianas Islands is home to a lot of garment manufacturers. And because this is a U.S. territory, the label inside those clothing can say made in the USA. But what people don't know is that garments made in that the workers are not covered by the same kind of federal protections that we have here. So, for example, they're not forced to pay minimum wage to garment workers on the Marianas Islands. And Roy Blunt helped Jack Abramoff stop U.S. wage, minimum wage and other laws protecting workers from applying to the Marianas Islands.
What did that have to do with Missouri?
Nothing to do with Missouri whatsoever. It's all about helping his buddy Jack Abramoff, who, you know, made consistent campaign contributions.
Is this illegal?
Nope, again, it's not illegal unless you can prove the quid pro quo, unless you can show that that Roy Blunt, in fact, wrote the letter in return for the campaign contribution or worked to oppose the U.S. wage and hour laws in return for campaign contributions, then, in fact, it will be illegal. Now, the one thing that's interesting here is that the Justice Department is looking very hard at the Jack Abramoff issues, and I'm sure that letter has been the one I've told you about that was signed by all the Republican top leadership. I'm sure that they've looked at that letter, and I'm sure that they've talked to Jack Abramoff about what he offered all of those members in return for their signatures on that letter. So Roy Blunt may, in fact, have something to worry about from the Justice Department regarding the Abramoff scandal.
Do we have anything other than the possibility that he might be worried about something from the Justice Department? Has the Justice Department indicated that Blunt is under investigation?
No, they haven't. But that doesn't mean anything because they are, you know, they're generally pretty quiet on these things.
So, and despite all of this, despite all of this, he's running to replace Tom DeLay.
Not only is he running, he's leading the race.
Oh, Jesus. We have to take a break. I'm talking to Melanie Sloan, Executive Director of CRU. CRU is Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington. She's joining us from Washington, D.C. My name is Liz Brown. This is the Wake Up Call. Our number here is 1-877-920-WGNU. My email is revolution@lizbrown.com. My website is lizbrown.com. That's LIZZBrown.com. Get to me. We have much to talk about.
No, we don't need
no more trouble.
No more trouble.
We don't need no more trouble.
Good morning, St. Louis. 31 minutes after the hour of 8 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton. We're looking at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by your Greater St. Louis area Toyota dealers. Eastbound 40 between Haley and Big Bend. Slow traffic due to an earlier accident. It's on the shoulder and traffic backs up through Lindbergh. Northbound 55 from 141 to Reeves Parish looks good. Eastbound 44 from 109 to Dyer. Look for traffic to be flowing through. Eastbound 40 from 141 to Mason. That traffic's easing. Northbound 270 from Gravelway to 44. It is still stop and go. Westbound 40 between Clayton Skinker and Haley. Expect delays. Eastbound 70 from Cave Springs all the way back through 79. Expect delays there. Still have sluggish traffic. Westbound 270 from West 4th to 170. Look for slight delays going on there. Eastbound 40 from Ballas to Lindbergh. Expect slow traffic. Westbound 5570 from 3rd Street onto the PSB. It's easing up. Westbound 64 to 5570 split. However, look for slow traffic. Westbound Kingbridge traffic from the Gravel Pit to Laclede's Landing looks good. Northbound Route 3 from 8th Street onto the Poplar Street Bridge. That congestion has been cleared. And that is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by your Greater St. Louis area Toyota dealers. Toyota owners, tires are an important part of your vehicle. Through February, purchase 4 tires from your St. Louis Metro Toyota dealer and receive 3 complimentary oil changes. Toyota, moving you forward. Now taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Wednesday. Colder, partly cloudy in the morning, becoming mostly cloudy this afternoon. Chance for showers with a high in the lower 40s. This evening, mostly cloudy until early morning, becoming partly cloudy, a low around 30. Tuesday, not quite as cool, partly cloudy, high in the 50s. And Wednesday, mostly cloudy. They're expecting a high in the lower 50s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 36 degrees. Lambert Field is reporting 38, both under clear skies. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call that's up next. We'll take another look at your news, your traffic, and your weather in the 9 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
Talk radio that discusses what matters most to you. It's coming to AM 920, Monday, January 30th.
This is Mitch Washington of the St. Louis office of Edward Jones, located at 200 North Broadway downtown, inviting you to tune in to Radio Free St. Louis for the WGNU Stock Market Recap, weekday afternoons immediately following the 3:30 traffic update. Find out how your investments are doing and how the numbers on Wall Street are affecting you. That's the WGNU Stock Market Recap with me, Mitch Washington, weekday afternoons at 3:30 on Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920 WGNU.
This is Dr. Laura Schlesinger with a personal invitation for you to join me from 2 to 4 every Monday through Friday afternoon on WGNU. It is so great to be back in the St. Louis area, and I'm looking forward to talking with you here at Radio Free St. Louis about your personal, work, and family problems and issues. Dial 1-800-DR-LAURA, that's 1-800-DR-LAURA, and let's take on the day. Join me, Dr. Laura Schlesinger, 2 to 4, Monday through Friday afternoons on Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920 WGNU.
Hi, it's Kevin.
And Sue McCarthy.
Of the Travel Planner Show.
Before you head out for a trip, you want to know how to pack, so check weather at yahoo.com, and then you'll know what to wear when you get there.
Oh, she's so good. The Travel Planner Show, every Saturday afternoon from 2 to 4 here on AM 920 WGNU.
He's back.
By popular demand and because it's so right on time, we're putting President Bush back on the couch. Yes, Dr. Justin Frank returns to the next edition of Mondays at 9 for another analysis of the chief executive. Is the domestic spying issue indicative of a controlling personality? Does the president completely depend on Dick Cheney, or is he merely a puppet deciding who pulls the strings? So many more issues have cropped up that we decided another session was in order. Don't miss Dr. Justin Frank, author of Bush on the Couch, our special guest on the next edition of Mondays at 9.
Informative, educational, provocative. This is the award-winning Morning Wake-Up Call with Liz Brown.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. I'm Liz Brown. Our number here is 1-877-920-WGNU. I am talking to the Executive Director of CRU, Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, Melanie Sloan. She's joining us from Washington, D.C., and we are talking about Representative Blunt, Roy Blunt. And Melanie, welcome back.
Thanks.
Let's talk about the relationship between Blunt and Philip Morris. Do you have any idea of how many pieces of legislation that he has managed to insert on behalf of his client or I guess on behalf of his donor?
You know, I don't. I think a lot of times it is really hard to say and keep abreast of exactly what these folks stick in, because so much of what happens now is done, you know, in the dead of night into these conference reports, which is once the House and Senate have already met to work out their differences on a bill, then the top leadership still has a chance to stick things into the bills that no one ever even sees. And that's one of the big problems we're seeing. Senator Barack Obama from Illinois has just introduced a bill to try and stop that practice, to force members to make sure that any provision that is going to be inserted in a bill goes through some kind of committee hearing process, which, you know, is sort of what the rules say, but has been ignored blithely for years now.
Talk to us about a piece of legislation that Blunt brokered with Representative Ernie Fletcher and the FDA and tobacco?
I'm not sure which piece of legislation you're talking about.
Okay. The apparently, it's my understanding that Blunt was attempting to allow the FDA and their regulation for tobacco would allow for the selling of safer cigarettes, designing and selling safer cigarettes.
Right. Right. Well, you know, Blunt carries Philip Morris's water on anything. And so Ernie Fletcher, the governor of Kentucky, also, you know, does a lot for Philip Morris. So anything they can do to prevent legislation that harms Philip Morris is, you know, that's what they're there for. As I said, Altria is the largest campaign contributor to Roy Blunt.
And when we talk about when you say the largest contributor, what is that in terms of dollars?
Oh, it's literally, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars. I can't, off the top of my head, I don't have all of his contributions. Wait, I think I do somewhere have. Let's see. Philip Morris has contributed a total of $177,588 to Blunt's political committees, $32,000 to his federal PAC, $114,000 to his soft money PAC, and $30,000 to his campaign committee. So that's between 97 and 2005.
Are there? I thought that there were limits on the amount of money that could be given to elected officials.
Well, there are limits at any given time, but here's the way you deal with that. First, what you do is it's not that Altria itself will give the money. It's all of its employees can give money. So all the top executives at Altria can give money. And each of them is limited to $2,000. So you figure you got your vice presidents, and there are a lot of them, and then their wives can all give $2,000. So that's how you, and that's in each campaign cycle. Also, a political action committee can get a $5,000 contribution. So there are, you know, ways, and there's a lot of employees at Altria. And that's how they work up the dollar figures.
How does Roy Blunt compare to other legislators? Is he top dog in terms of hooking his family up, in terms of the water carrying that he does for his donors? How does he compare?
You know, I think he's, as I said, second only to Tom DeLay in his ability to do this. You know, the way he has worked for his top donors, the way he has helped out his family members, and the way he also shares the money. One of the ways that members of Congress become powerful in the House is by not only bringing in money, but by then sharing that money with their colleagues for their own campaigns. And that's what makes you a popular member of Congress. That's why DeLay stayed in power for so long. He was this incredibly prolific fundraiser, and then he spread the money around.
So does that explain the vote then?
That totally explains the vote. That is the thing that explains the vote, is the amount of money that Roy Blunt has brought in. He's also apparently a very genial fellow, and members tend to like him. But I tell you, they like him a lot more because he has a big pocketbook.
My number here is 454-0400 is my phone number, and I want to thank you so much, Melanie. Where can people get a copy of this report?
They can look at our website, which is citizensforethics.org, and we also have another website called beyonddelay.org, which is where we have the 13 most corrupt members of Congress listed, and Roy Blunt is on that list.
And predictions on Tom DeLay?
Oh, Tom DeLay is not only going to have his problems down in Texas, but look for him to be indicted in Washington by the federal government in the next year for his contacts with Jack Abramoff.
Wow. Melanie, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. My toll-free long-distance number is 1-877-920-WGNU. My name is Liz Brown. This is The Wake-Up Call. You need to get to me at 454-0400, 1-877-920-WGNU. Amazing. Andy Blunt. I mean, we've been talking about Matt Blunt all of the few months that he's been in office. 4 years out of University of Missouri Law School, he gets a list. He becomes a lobbyist, and Ameren UE. Does that explain why your rates are going up? Farmers Insurance Company, the Missouri Auto Dealership Association, the Missouri Hospital Association, Kraft Foods Global, Miller Brewing Company, Philip Morris Company, UPS, and all of these people signed up after Matt Blunt became governor. And the sick part about this, the wicked part about this, the twisted part about this, the awful part about this, is none of it is illegal. At least him getting the job is not illegal. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. And if you want to toll free long distance me, you can do that at 1-877-920-WGNU. Whoo, I was looking at what has been done against Ameren UE after that breach in the levee, after the flooding. And I was wondering why, or if you were wondering why, it has taken the man-child governor that we have so long to respond to your needs. If Ameren UE, remember how Ameren UE responded after the disaster? They weren't contrite. They weren't embarrassed. They weren't sorrowful. Why? Because they knew who they had in their pocket. They knew they had at least one son in. They knew they know about his dad. And it seems to me, if it is illegal for so many things it's illegal to do, why isn't it illegal for politicians to do this kind of stuff? I remember one movie, The Distinguished Gentleman, with Eddie Murphy. He went to Congress because he happened to have the name of a dead guy who was a congressman. And he ran on that name and he was elected. And, you know, surprise, surprise, he uncovered corruption in Washington. And when he was confronted with the corruption that he uncovered, he said, you know what, I was a con man before I became elected, but all my stuff was illegal. The real story here is, he said, if I had done what I've done since I've been at Washington on the streets, I would have been arrested. You come to Washington and it's all legal. My name is Liz Brown. This is the Wake Up Call. We're taking a break. My number here is 1-877-920-WGNU. Stay with me. I'll be back with you after the break.
I got something I want to talk about. Y'all let me in. The time has come to air my feelings. Yeah. There's just so much confusion going down. I'm not the kind to be complaining. But sometimes you got to stand out from the crowd. Everyone got their own opinion. I sure got mine. It's my world. Oh, don't you come messing with my world.
This Global News Report is brought to you by attorney Albert Walton, helping people get paid for over 25 years. This is your wake-up call Global News Update. Dateline Caracas. Three South American nations have announced plans to build a new gas pipeline that will run almost the entire length of the continent. Brazil, Venezuela, and Argentina say the project will take about 7 years to finish and will cost nearly $20 billion. The pipeline will begin in Caracas and end in Buenos Aires, running through Bolivia, Paraguay, and Uruguay with a total length of some 8,000 kilometers. More details are to be announced in early March. And Dateline Washington. A new document has come to light that indicates the Pentagon has designed plans to conduct information operations on computer networks, wireless formats, and other modern mediums. The recently declassified document is called the Information Operations Roadmap and was drafted in 2003 and signed off on by Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld. The strategies outlined include people who feed information to journalists, specially trained forces who will attack the thoughts and beliefs of enemies, and computer specialists who will institute programs that destroy the networks of their enemies. Furthermore, this document also recommends the U.S. should take control of all communications in the electromagnetic spectrum so that it can disrupt or destroy any means of enemy communications.
This could mean that our armed forces are laying plans to take out every phone, computer network, and radar system on the planet that it will consider a threat to national security. This is your wake-up call, Global News Update.
When you've been hurt in an accident, there are many things to consider. Doctor's bills, time lost from work, medical costs, ongoing injuries, pain and suffering. For over 25 years, attorney Albert Walton has helped people get paid for their property, paid for their pain and suffering, paid for their loss. Before you talk to anyone, call 314-388-3400. That's 388-3400 and talk to attorney Albert Walton for free. If you've been hurt, let attorney Albert Walton's knowledge and experience help you get paid. 314-388-3400.
Hi, this is Ken with The Truth, and I want to talk to you today about a company called Midwest Financial Services. If you're in the market to purchase a home or just don't know where to start, this company is there to help you. It will show you how to get the best possible financing programs on the refinance or purchase of your new home. It will also educate you how you can get your credit back in line so that you may be able to purchase your first home or your dream home. And by calling 314-580-3191 today, you'll receive a free credit analysis. Once again, that phone number is 314-580-3191. At Midwest Financial Services, they're helping others achieve financial freedom.
Change everything you know about AM 920. It's coming to WGNU Monday, January 30th.
Need to get it off your chest? 314-454-0400. 1-877-920-WGNU. Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920 WGNU. The cure for the common cause.
He's back.
By popular demand and because it's so right on time, we're putting President Bush back on the couch. Yes, Dr. Justin Frank returns to the next edition of Mondays at 9 for another analysis of the chief executive. Is the domestic spying issue indicative of a controlling personality? Does the president completely depend on Dick Cheney, or is he merely a puppet deciding who pulls the strings? So many more issues have cropped up that we decided another session was in order. Don't miss Dr. Justin Frank, author of Bush on the Couch, our special guest on the next edition of Mondays at 9. A voice for those that should be heard. This is the award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown.
Make me want to holla. This is Liz Brown. 454-0400 is my phone number. 1-877-920-WGNU. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have so much stuff to talk about. You're on the wake-up call. You're on the wake-up call. You're on the wake-up call. Good morning. You're on the wake-up call.
Good morning, Liz.
Renee, good morning.
How you doing?
I'm outstanding. How are you?
I'm truly perturbed right about now.
Mm-hmm.
Did you see the news?
I have seen bits and pieces of it.
Liz, the police, Maplewood Police Department beat a man on live TV. And they're saying that it was an excessive force. And for anyone that have not caught the news coverage, Maplewood police said that they had a suspect casing a convenience store. A chase ensued, and I'm not downplaying the chase because it was dangerous what the suspect did. But Liz, when the young man got out and ran, he fell
three or four police officers fell on top of him, punching and beating him. One stood at his foot, at the suspect's feet, and kicked him.
I saw that. He kicked, and he kicked several times.
Yes, he and when he looked up and seen the news cameras, that's when he stopped.
Now, explain to me why he needed to kick him.
There's no understanding, Liz.
Is that part of police training that you're supposed to kick suspects? Is that what you're supposed to do when a suspect that is laying prone on the ground with two other police officers there, two other cops there, you're supposed to kick him? And I think and the glance that I saw, I need to look at the clip longer and in more detail. But from what I saw in between coming doing my show here, there was no reason for him to kick him.
No.
There was no reason for that man to be kicked like that.
No, it was not. And Liz, when he fell face down.
Mm.
Now, how was he fighting him?
Mm. Mm.
How can you fight someone and you're face down?
And you didn't bring him to the ground. He went to the ground on his own accord. Absolutely. So
right.
Where was the fight? Where did the fight start? How did the fight start?
Liz, I hope the tape doesn't end up missing, but if it does, I record it.
And how does the fight, how are you fighting somebody if you're on your belly? How did you start? How did you start the fight?
He fell face down.
Mm.
It was almost like he was surrendering, going down on his own, and they jumped on top of him.
Mm.
So where's the fight? I didn't see him throw one punch.
Mm.
But I seen the officers beating him on top of him, beating him,
and the officer
kicking him.
The one that really caught my eye was the one that was kicking.
Kicking him.
It was like, I don't want to get down there. I just want to add something to it.
Yes.
Thanks for your call, Renee, and we'll keep our eye on that.
All righty, Liz.
454-0400 is my phone number. You're on the wake-up call, Ken.
Yeah, Liz, I used to... I used to get angry when I see the police beating a suspect like that. But you know, Liz, I've come to the conclusion. The other day, a teenager ran at red light and killed two people and seriously injured another people. He ran away. This dude here, he put I don't know how many people's lives in jeopardy. He was running red lights. He was running. He was going. He could have hit school buses. And so I can kind of, it's not right, Liz.
Well, wait,
but
wait,
I can understand. Hold on. When the police, when they finally get that guy,
Ken,
to me, in a way, he
Ken,
deserves something. He
Ken,
put everybody's lives in jeopardy.
Ken,
he could have pulled over and got arrested.
Ken.
Yes.
Then why even have laws? If you can get so, if you are paid, if your job is to, you've been paid, you've been trained, we spend taxpayers' money to train you and to, we're not asking the average citizen to deal with this situation. The average citizen isn't allowed to have a hormonal excuse for punching somebody in the nose that looks at your wife the wrong way. You're not allowed to do that, and a cop is not allowed to have a hormonal expression in his job either. Wait a minute.
Okay.
The fact we live in a country of laws. Just because someone breaks the law does not mean that you get to go and break the law, or it's justified that you get and go and break the law. What do you tell your kids? Do you tell your kids if one of them's doing wrong, that entitles the other one to do something wrong too?
I understand.
Of course
what
not.
You're saying, but
no,
again,
I don't think you do. I don't think you do understand it, because if you understood it, you have to agree that there are laws. And because one citizen does not follow the law, does not entitle the police force to ignore the laws.
But I'm tired of these people
that has nothing
out here on the streets running, just running.
So the answer is,
people, and then when we arrest them, are we just supposed to put the handcuffs on them, just taking them?
Yes.
He killed people.
He hasn't killed a single person. Come on,
boy.
Come on, man.
He was lucky that he didn't.
And
what if it would have?
You're right, Ken. You're right, Ken. The cops should just kill him. Just kill him and be done with it.
No,
you're right. You're right. You're right. They should just kill him. You're right. You're right. Kill him. Kill him. Kill him. Just kill him. Just pull your guns off and kill him. Just kill him. You're right, Jim. That's the answer to violence. That's the answer to lawlessness, is more lawlessness and more violence. You're right. I don't know what I'm talking about. You're right. You're on a wake-up call.
Hi there.
I'm
out. It interesting. Hey, what happened to the Liz Brown filibuster? When Obama pulled away, you pulled away too?
Well, see, darling, you don't pay attention. Jim, I wish you would pay attention. Because of what we did, Obama has now come back and said, I support a filibuster. Because of all the phone calls that we made, Obama has said, I support a filibuster. You didn't know that, Jim?
Good job. Hey,
I know. Thank you very much.
Why don't
Thank
you go to work on talent and bonds?
That's a lost cause. We're going to put our energy where it matters. That's what a smart fighter does.
I'm in favor of this, and that'll do away with the filibuster, so keep it up. I'm behind
plan
you.
Plan on it. Thank you. And you should be. And you should be. 454-0400 is my phone number. You're on the wake-up call.
Good morning, Liz.
Yes.
Happy New Year to you. This is Josephine.
Happy New Year to you, Josephine.
All right. I watched that incident with the officers. What I do not understand, how was it that that pursuit took from Maplewood all the way into the city of St. Louis?
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't understand how once that young man jumped out that van and, you know, he went toward the side of a building, and as Renee said, it looked as though he was submitting because he went face down. I couldn't understand the officer that came, that Johnny come lately officer, to get his little bit in by kicking this man. And I could not for the life of me understand why that officer was hitting that man with that stick.
I didn't see that part. I only got a glance at it.
Before the officer came up and kicked that man, the one officer, after they subdued him, he ran up and started hitting that man in his head with that nightstick. I listened to the news media try to justify why they were doing what they were doing. It was totally, utterly ridiculous. And I don't know who that guy was that just called, but if that young man in that van was jeopardizing the life of others, well, Maplewood Police Department was too, because every life that young man went through, that officer went through it. And then he...
And I got a roll. Thank you, Josephine. I'm Liz Brown. This is the Wake Up Call. I will be back with Dr. Justin Frank, Bush on the Couch. You don't want to miss this. Stay tuned.
I will never say that progress is being made.
The issues that matter most. It's AM 920 WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Daria Albinger. It's one of the most dangerous assignments a journalist can take, covering a war zone. ABC's Bob Woodruff and Doug Vogt knew that, and today the co-anchor of World News Tonight and his cameraman are in the ICU at Landstuhl Army Hospital in Germany, the victims of a roadside bombing near Baghdad. More from ABC's Aaron Katursky.
In the last week alone, there have been more than 200 roadside bomb attacks in Iraq. They're a constant worry among the troops, really among anyone who ventures into the streets.
Frankly, we don't get to report as much as we'd like in Iraq because of the security.
ABC News President David Weston says Bob and Doug knew the risks.
We have perhaps a false sense that when we're embedded with the U.S. military, there's a particular sense of safety. And in fact, there's nowhere in Iraq that's safe.
Just this morning, an IED went off near a candy store and killed 10 people. Aaron Katursky, ABC News, New York.
It's been 4 years since the Enron scandal dominated the headlines. Today, jury selection begins in the trial of the top two former executives for the energy trading giant.
They will be selecting 12 jurors and four alternates from a pool of 160 people. After Enron went bankrupt, more than 11,000 people lost their jobs, and more than $1 billion in savings just disappeared.
ABC's Mike Von Fremd in Houston. President Bush may practice his State of the Union address a few more times today. The White House says tomorrow's speech will run under an hour, including applause, and it's coming at a time when some poll numbers are a lot lower than the president might like. Is there anything he can do to change that tomorrow night?
I think he has to say, I understand we've got some problems. Things are good in this area and this area, but I understand we have some real problems. I understand people are being laid off by the thousands here. We got to address that and come up with some ideas.
Conservative political analyst Bay Buchanan. There could be a happy ending to the latest mine incident. Officials at a facility near Saskatchewan, Canada, say most of the 70 miners who were trapped for hours after an underground fire have been rescued, and the others could soon follow. Dow and NASDAQ both up. This is ABC News.
More coffee, mister?
Yes, please.
Oh, boy.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Hot coffee all over you. Let me get some paper towels and some cold water. Are you all right?
Why, I'm just fine, young lady. It's just scalding coffee.
Mister, you must be gelling.
That's why I'm not yelling, even though there's considerable redness and swelling.
More gel, more gelling. New and improved Dr. Scholl's Massaging Gel Insoles. More cushioning, totally outrageous comfort. To start gelling like never before, see the doctor, Dr. Scholl's.
Waitress, how about some more coffee?
Former Nesquik powder users are telling us why they switched to rich chocolate Ovaltine.
My girls don't like to drink white milk, and the only way I could get them to drink it was with chocolate milk. I'd seen on TV that Ovaltine has extra vitamins in it. Now I'm using it, and my girls love the taste. And they're drinking their milk, getting their calcium, and all the vitamins from Ovaltine. I stopped using Nesquik because it just doesn't have the vitamins that Ovaltine has.
Ovaltine. Try it for the nutrition. Keep buying it for the taste.
More Ovaltine, please!
Another day, more antics in Saddam Hussein's trial. This time, though, the judge threw the former leader out of court.
When the trial of Saddam Hussein and his co-defendants resumed in Baghdad Sunday, the new judge in charge made sure his presence was felt. Rauf Abdelrahman, a 64-year-old Kurd, replaced the chief judge, who was criticized as being too tolerant of Saddam's outbursts. From the very start, he was challenged and made sure everyone knew who was in charge.
ABC's Lauren Rogers.
Ladies and gentlemen, the actor goes to the cast of Crash.
There was a surprise at the Screen Actors Guild Awards last night. The movie about racial bias beat out The Favorite, Brokeback Mountain, for Best Ensemble Cast. Reese Witherspoon took Best Actress for her portrayal of June Carter Cash in Walk the Line, and Philip Seymour Hoffman won Best Actor as the title character in the movie Capote. But the question remains, are they Oscar worthy? We'll find out tomorrow when the Academy Award nominations are announced. Daria Albinger, ABC News.
Time for a report of WGNU News. This update is brought to you by the Illinois Lottery. Reporting WGNU News, I'm Peyton Colston. Another area school district is warning parents and students about the dangers of staph infections. A Rittenour High School wrestler is taking antibiotics for a staph infection and recovering at home. Wrestling practices last Thursday and Friday were canceled, and the wrestling areas, locker rooms, restrooms, and several classrooms were disinfected. Letters have gone home to Rittenour parents, cautioning them to make sure children wash their hands frequently and do not share athletic gear or personal items. Last week, a Ladue High School wrestler left the hospital after being admitted for a staph infection. In other news, police are now saying the death of a pony found along a road in Roxana, Illinois, was not the result of animal abuse. According to the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, a man told Roxana police on Friday morning that he was the pony's owner and the animal had died of natural causes. The man said he was taking the pony to a landfill on Monday after it died and it accidentally fell out of his truck on Wanda Road. One of the members of the National Board of Directors for Mothers Against Drunk Driving is reacting to the sentencing of the man who maimed St. Louis police officer Matthew Browning. Mike Bolin says the city of St. Louis is sending a message to its police department.
It is a good, clear, and concise message from the city of St. Louis that they value law enforcement and that 3 years of this man's life has been taken away from him. 3 years is a misnomer. I mean, we'll be lucky if 9 months, but it could be the longest 9 months of his life.
John Middlebuescher was sentenced to 3 years behind bars on Friday. He pleaded guilty to two counts of assault in November for causing the October 2004 drunk driving accident that cost Officer Browning both of his legs. And finally, the Isle of Capri Casinos will move its corporate headquarters to Creve Coeur later this year. The company is currently based in Biloxi, Mississippi, and will maintain a regional presence there. Isle of Capri will move about 150 corporate jobs to Creve Coeur beginning in early summer. The company operates two casinos in Missouri, one in Kansas City and one in Boonville. And that's a report of WGNU News, brought to you by the Illinois Lottery. New, the Illinois Lottery's Ticket for the Cure. 100% of the proceeds support the fight against breast cancer. Play Ticket for the Cure today, because when you play, everybody wins. I'm Peyton Colston, reporting for WGNU News.
Good morning, St. Louis. 7 minutes after the hour of 9 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by MoDOT. Northbound 55 between 141 and Reeves Parish. Look for normal traffic there. Eastbound 40 between 141 and Mason Road. That traffic is easing up this hour. Northbound 270 from Gravelway to 44. That congestion has been cleared. Westbound 255 from Coke to 55. Expect normal traffic this hour. Eastbound 255 at Jefferson Barracks Bridge is bridge maintenance operations. That has one lane closed. Westbound 5570 from 3rd Street onto the Poplar Street Bridge. Look for that traffic to be easing. Westbound 64, 5570. Look for slow traffic. Westbound Kingbridge traffic from the gravel pit all the way into Laclede's Landing. Look for no problems to report there. Northbound Route 3 from 8th Street onto the Poplar Street Bridge looks good. Lafayette at 44. There's a report of traffic signals on red flash bulbs at N Highway Drive, look for, or North Highway Drive, look for traffic lights not working. They are on red flash. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by the I-55 Travel Safe Partnership. I-55 from Peavely to Festus is a travel safe zone. Buckle up, pay attention, and slow down. There are no warnings, only tickets when you speed, because we want you to arrive alive. Now, taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Wednesday. For today, colder, partly cloudy in the morning, becoming mostly cloudy by the afternoon. Slight chance of showers with a high in the lower 40s this evening. Mostly cloudy till early morning, then becoming partly cloudy with a low around 30. Tuesday, not quite as cool, partly cloudy, high in the lower 50s. Tuesday evening, partly cloudy until early morning, then becoming mostly cloudy, a low in the upper 30s. And Wednesday, mostly cloudy with a high around 50. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we're holding on to 36 degrees. Lambert Field has 38 degrees, both under sunny skies. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call. That's up next. We'll take another look at your news and your weather in the 10 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Revolution in the air. Tell me, brothers, how can this end? I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brothers, how can this end?
It is time for us to use our power. Please do not ask for power. Nobody is going to give it to you.
Some very sad news for all of you, the people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight. Remember?
I will never say that progress is being made. If you take a knife and knife back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below me.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brothers, how can this end?
Well, the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever. More families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it. A struggle against the common enemies of man. Tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal. Yet many are denied equal treatment.
And so we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
Revolution in the air. Tell me, brother, how can this end?
this is Mondays at 9 with Liz Brown, where we take a closer look at issues and people shaping our world and how they affect us. Once again, here's Liz Brown.
Welcome back. Welcome back. This is Monday. So, therefore, this is Mondays at 9. My guest this morning is author of A Bush on the Couch, Dr. Justin A. Frank. And I'm thinking it's time to get Bush back on the couch again, given the fact we have this speech that he's going to be giving tomorrow, the speech to the nation, the State of the Union. I think it's really critical that at this point, at this juncture, that we take a look at, before we let him take a look at our world, we need to take a look at him. And so we're going to do that this morning with a Dr. Justin Frank. He's joining us from Washington, D.C. Dr. Frank, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
Welcome back.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
It's good to have you here. I just really think that we just need to have another session here prior to this State of the Union address. One of the things that we talked about a little bit, and I'd like to just do that to help bring people into where you are. Talk to us about how it is that you can engage in an analysis, a psychological analysis of Bush, since you've never treated Bush.
Okay, I am a psychoanalyst, and there's a discipline in psychoanalysis called applied psychoanalysis, and that is application of psychoanalytic principles to studying the lives of famous people, of public figures, of historical figures that you would never have in your consulting room. And there's an intensive study that I did of President Bush over a two-year period where read everything he said, wrote, said about him, watched all of his press conferences, read the memoirs written by his both of his parents, every bit of public information that was at all available, that was written about him by friends and other people, and then studying that, looking for patterns, looking for consistencies and inconsistencies in behavior, and beginning to think about what makes him function and what are the most important turning points in his life, and also what are the most important issues that he is continuing to have to deal with internally. And that's through the application of my psychoanalytic knowledge.
So when you...
And there's one last thing. There's also a tradition for this that has actually been used now in the last 25, 30 years for political purposes. Namely, the CIA has a group of psychoanalysts who have been studying, doing psychological profiles of foreign leaders. I don't think anybody's done one quite in this much depth as I have of Bush, but they do them regularly, and they're used.
Well, putting on the psychoanalytic hat and pretending that you have George Bush on the couch, I want you to listen to something and tell me what comes to your mind as in your profession when you if you were to hear a client say this.
There can be some times where we don't agree with each other, but that's okay. If this were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier, just as long as I'm the dictator.
Now, he laughed. First of all, the client laughed when he said it.
Yes.
And what would your take, given what you have done in the study of his family, his mother, his father, what would you say about him?
Well, one thing is that the laugh, let's look at it from two perspectives. One from his history and his childhood, like you just asked about his mother and father and himself. And that we can do. And then the second is the actual process, namely the what he says and also how he laughs and how he deals with it. So let's look at the first one historically about wanting to be a dictator. He was the firstborn. When he was 3 and a half, he had a sister born, and when he was 7, that sister died tragically of leukemia. By that time, Jeb was a baby. and George was really left so almost out to pasture by his parents, who spent some time with him, but not very much. And Mrs. Bush, his mother, Barbara, concentrated on the next group of children. So if you read her memoirs, you'll see some mention of George, but life really begins in the family with Jeb, who is real the new joy of their life after their loss of Robin.
And there wasn't even a funeral for Robin, and
there
George
was no
didn't even
funeral
know.
For Robin. There was no. There was the very brief memorial service. He was not allowed to talk. Not allowed to. I mean, there was no encouragement, and he was not to talk about Robin at home, so he was left to his own devices almost completely. There was
He didn't even know she was ill.
He didn't know she was ill, and then when he was knew a little bit about it towards the end of her life, but then he wasn't told till 2 days after she died that she had died. In fact, he was expecting to see her come home with them. They were up at Sloan Kettering, where she died, in New York, and they came to fetch him at school when he was in the second grade, and Robin was not in the car with them.
Mm.
It's sort of how they deal with news. But one of the things that you can do as a firstborn to compensate for the injury and also your guilt and your confusion about things is that you can end up enjoying having power where you can have it. If you're feeling that helpless and powerless and bad about yourself and about your life, one of the ways you can compensate is by becoming a dominating figure over your siblings. And he used to boss his siblings around. He would, when he was a little bit older, he would shoot at them with BB guns. He would line them up in the hallway. I didn't even know about that when I wrote the book. I found out about that later when there was a tape of a lecture or talk that one of his brothers gave at an elementary school in Virginia, and talked about how Big Brother George used to shoot at them in the butt with BB guns. But he really...
Well, he kind of had a fixation about the whole buttal region.
He had a fixation about butts also, but we can get into that in a little bit. But clearly, what was so important was to be in charge and be the boss. And since he had trouble reading and trouble concentrating in school, and he was most likely a hyperactive person, he was still smart enough to compensate for those deficits by developing a very strong personality that was quite charming and quite sarcastic. His mother was sarcastic, and so was he. And so he ascended to a kind of forceful level of power, in a way, even in Andover, in his prep school, where he was a kind of local a kind of bully and a teaser and all the way through. So he liked to be
like
in charge, and he liked to be a dictator, in part because, not a dictator, but, you know, he did. He liked to be in charge. The other reason it was important for him to be in charge is that if he was a member of the group rather than the leader of the group, it would be very hard for him to think clearly. It's hard enough when he's in charge, but when he's in the group, he would get to be very loose and make random comments that really had no relevance to whatever the group's task was. And there's lots of evidence to that from the various boards that he sat on as on board of directors at various businesses when he was already out of school. So there's a long history of the need to be a leader. Now, the actual quote you played for me, my immediate response was noticing his nervous laughter. And
well,
my first thought is...
Let me play another clip for you, okay?
Cause, sure.
Because I want to get that snicker in. Number 11, Howard.
Non-transparent regimes that threaten the security of the world should be allowed to gain the technologies necessary to make a weapon. And the Iranians have said, we want a weapon. And it's not in the world's interest that they have a weapon.
And we have that little nervous little titter in there.
Yes, a nervous titter and a nervous almost laugh. And I think that every time you hear that, at least listening, if he were in my office as you asked the question and was talking like that, I would wonder what it is that is he's trying to either hide or that is making him anxious enough to have to laugh And a lot of times you go to sometimes films in the most awkward situations, and sometimes a few members of the audience laugh, and it's usually because they're anxious about something. Something's making them nervous about what's going on the screen. I think he's very nervous about the truth in his statement, which is that he would like to be a dictator. And I think that he's nervous that he's going to be, that he revealed too much in that interview or in that, you know, offhand comment about himself, and that he was actually on the road to actually doing that. And certainly we've seen that borne out in his behavior and how he runs his cabinet meetings and how he has to be surrounded by people who agree with him and how the news gets filtered to him. So he functions almost like a monarch or a king who doesn't really know the realities of what's going on in the world, but really is fed news through his supporters and through his cabinet members. So if you are at all in disagreement with him, you are immediately cast aside. The question about the weapons, he's the one who likes having the weapon. And it's the same kind of thing. The little snicker that you hear and the little pause, again, it's very important to listen to him when he does that, because he's usually saying something about himself, that he's not to be trusted with a weapon of mass destruction, is what he's saying, that he is a dangerous person, and he's aware of it at some level, he, George Bush.
How does his relationship with alcohol, his relationship with other drugs, factor into his ability to stay in charge?
Well, alcohol is one thing that compromises judgment, and it does interfere.
Is he an alcoholic? He
is an alcoholic. He's an untreated alcoholic by definition, because he's never had treatment.
And so in your experience with untreated alcoholics, what are the dangers?
The dangers are that they jump to conclusions, they're very suspicious, they have trouble tolerating anxiety, so they immediately have to get rid of anxiety and anything that makes them anxious. And people who have stopped drinking but haven't really treated their alcoholism, but they're not drinking, those are people who essentially have to find other ways to manage their anxiety. And they have several different anxieties. He has one major one, which is that he'd start to drink again. And everybody who's an alcoholic who stopped drinking is anxious about being afraid that they might start up again. But even more so for him, he has to find other techniques to manage his anxiety, and one of them, of course, has been this massive exercise program, another technique to manage his by dissipating his energy, getting rid of his nervous energy. And all of us who exercise, and everybody who does some of that, knows how good it feels afterwards and that there is a relief. With him, it's a much more desperate situation where he has to exercise all the time. Secondly, he has to have very brief staff meetings and very short duration, because if they're any longer, his attention will wander and he will get anxious and agitated, and then again he has to get rid of the anxiety. So he'll snap at people, he'll be irritable, he'll be difficult to deal with. Another way to manage anxiety, of course, is through religion. And if he feels that he's always on the right side of things by embracing his particular version of faith, which has to do with a sense of certainty, then that's also a way to manage anxiety. Another way to manage anxiety for him is seeing the world in black and white, good and bad. So all the bad things that happen are going to be caused by outside people, never by himself. So he can always see himself either as the good guy or the victim of some other bad guy. And that actually relieves anxiety, because he doesn't have the anxiety of indecision or of not knowing what to do or feeling that, oh, my gosh, maybe I'm going to hurt somebody. He doesn't have to worry about those things. So there's lots of different ways he's learned to cope, but none of them have involved facing the anxiety or finding out what it is that is driving him so to have to get rid of it so dramatically. And I think that he never learned how to manage his emotions. There's a term, a technical term called affect, which means feeling, affect regulation. And the children, when they're very young, learn how to regulate their feelings through being calmed by their mother, through being responded to by one or both of their parents. When they're upset about something, they get, you know, a cuddle, or they get held, or they talk to, and it's a process that takes place over time. Well, he didn't seem to ever have that process happen. So there's no figure in his early life that he ever leaned on or that meant anything to him that we can detect. And so he was really left to find his own ways to manage his anxiety.
Sometimes
it worked and sometimes it didn't.
And can I just want to jump in here for a second.
Sure, I'm sorry.
Can you tell whether or not, as a doctor, as a treating physician for someone with the issues that George W. Bush has, can you tell that whether or not he's drinking again? Can you tell whether or not he's using drugs again?
It's very hard to tell without really spending time alone with him.
Mm-hmm.
I think that if I did spend time alone with him, I could tell pretty quickly. I think that from his public persona and his public appearances in the last few months, he certainly has seemed more agitated than before. He has that lower jaw kind of tremble and the circular movement that a lot of people, at least on the internet, seem to have connected with cocaine. I forgot what they call it. They have a name for it. And his at times he seems a bit disheveled and out of sorts, and those are the kinds of things that you might say, well, gee, maybe he's drinking again, maybe, and he's certainly been photographed holding glasses of wine, but who knows what's in those glasses.
I know that he's uses some of the no beers.
He does say that he drinks no beers, and all no beers have a little bit of alcohol, and most people who work in AA and are involved with AA are pretty much opposed to the no beer beer because they feel that it's a way of sort of giving a wink and a nod to not drinking but still being able to get a little bit of alcohol inside. That's a very controversial thing about whether or not that's a good thing or not. But I do think that there's no direct way to know. Sometimes when you think he's drinking, then he goes and gives a speech and he's completely in control and very clear and he looks fine.
Just because he's drinking doesn't mean that he's drinking every day, does it?
Right. It doesn't mean he's drinking every day, and it doesn't mean he's drinking. I just would not be surprised if he were drinking. There's no way to know for sure without really having an interview with him. I have felt for the longest time, and it's been, you know, I mean,
We need to take a break, Dr. Frank. Hold that thought. And then in addition to finishing up your thought there, I'd also, when we come back, I want to talk about the smirk. I want to talk about this if we can. I'm Liz Brown. This is Mondays at 9. I'm talking to author Dr. Justin Frank, author of Bush on the Couch. He is joining us from Washington, D.C. This is Liz Brown. Stay with us.
Smuckers Stars on Ice, an IMG production. It's going to be a great celebration, the 20th anniversary tour of Smucker's Stars on Ice.
This is Dr. Laura Schlesinger. Join me every Monday through Friday from 2 to 4 on Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920 WGNU, and get a new attitude.
Enjoy a 75-minute tour all around Alton, viewing American bald eagles in their natural habitat on February 5th and 12th. Tours will leave at 11, 12:30, and 2 o'clock, beginning and ending at the National Great Rivers Museum in Alton, Illinois. The cost for this sample tour is $5 per person. Tours are filled on a first-come, first-served basis. For more information, call Bluff City Tours at 618-466-8693. Something for the birds from WGNU.
It's the biggest change at WGNU in 30 years, and it's coming Monday, January 30th.
This is Jim Curran, Curran Events. We're on every Monday night now from 8 to 10 p.m. On Curran Events, we let both sides of an issue be heard. That way we can learn from each other. That's Monday nights, 8 to 10 p.m., Jim Curran, Curran Events, right here on WGNU.
The struggle for fairness on the award-winning Wake-Up Call with Liz Brown.
I had my picture taken with him, evidently. I've had my picture taken with a lot of people. Having my picture taken with someone doesn't mean that I'm a friend with them or know them very well. I've had my picture taken with you.
It's not the pale moon that excites me. The thrills and delights me. Oh, no. Yes. Just as many as you.
But I view this situation we're in as war. And therefore, I must protect the American people with the tools available to me.
This is Mondays at 9 with Liz Brown, where we take a closer look at issues and people shaping our world. Once again, here's Liz Brown.
Welcome back. Our guest this morning is Dr. Justin Frank. He is the author of Bush on the Couch, Inside the Mind of the President. Dr. Frank is joining us from Washington, D.C. And Dr. Frank, I wanted you to finish your thought.
Well, I will finish my thought, but I just have to respond to the two clips you just played.
All right.
One was about saying that just because he's had his picture taken with Abramoff doesn't mean he knows him and he doesn't know him, and he's had his picture taken with lots of people. And the second thing he talked about was using all the tools available at his disposal to fight terrorism, which includes wiretapping of citizens. Well, the reason you wiretap people is because you suspect that somebody might know somebody else and you wonder what's going on with their connections. In other words, he's saying, I'm exempt from that kind of behavior, but basically he is wanting to incarcerate people, imprison people, investigate people based on suspicions that they might be connected one to another. And yet when there's a public photo of him taken with somebody who is clearly going to become a felon, convicted, he really says that doesn't count.
Mm.
And I think that this is a good example of what a lot of people who are not psychoanalysts will call just very simple hypocrisy and double speaking.
And what would you call it?
Well,
as
I call it projection, which mm-hmm. is that he attributes his own guilt to other people. So he doesn't have to feel guilty. So he's going to be busy listening to everybody else's conversations when, in fact, it's his conversations that are causing all the problem. He's the one who says, find a way to justify the war in Iraq. Find a way to justify torture in Abu Ghraib or in Guantanamo. Find a way to wiretap without having to present it to the courts and ask for a warrant. Find a way to get rid of treaties and not pay attention to Kyoto.
But he was kind of a mean little kid, though, wasn't he?
He was always a mean little kid.
Talk to us about some examples that illustrate what type of a child he was.
Well, he was a mean...
And what kind of a man?
Well, it's a very complicated thing in a way, because he was both a mean little kid and was a popular kid because he was funny and charming and yet could be mean. So what would happen is when you are confronted in a situation like that and you're one of his friends, it's very important to always stay on the good side of him.
Like
to never be a victim of his teasing or his cruelty, because you want to have that. You never want to have that laser attack or wit or focus, whatever you want to call it, aimed at you. So you end up becoming much more complicit with his behavior, and you laugh a lot at his jokes, the way people laugh at a mafia king's jokes. You know, you sort of laugh because you have to. If you don't laugh, you know, he'll say, why aren't you laughing? And then you'll be in trouble. I think that there's that kind of evidence as a child. And then he would show and reveal his cruelty early on. When he was 10 or 11, he used to stick firecrackers into frogs and blow them up. Later on, and he would love doing that, and later on, and he had some friends who would watch him, and that was written up by one of his friends, I read in a Texas newspaper, and in a joking way, which I don't find terribly funny. Then when he was...
Well, if a parent brought a child in to you saying that my child is sticking firecrackers up, it's either the mouth or the rear of a frog, and blowing them up, would you say that that child needed treatment?
Yes.
All right.
Right away.
All right.
And that child specifically would need treatment both to help manage his behavior, and that may include medication, and he would also need, that child, he or she would need, usually it's a he who does those kinds of things, would need treatment to try to get through to what it is that he is so full of hate about and so full of murderous feelings about. Because usually when somebody does that kind of cruel behavior as a child, in my experience, they are usually attacking a part of themselves that they hate. Mm. In other words, they're unconsciously attacking a weak, defenseless part of themselves and having domination over it by destroying it. And it has to be done repetitively over and over and over again. That's why he can never relax. That's why he has to spy on Americans. That's why it doesn't matter what's happening. He is always going to be suspicious and need to surround himself in safe places.
Now, that
when he
happened
was in
also.
College, he was the head of a fraternity pledge master in his fraternity in his senior year, and he actually used to brand pledges with hot coat hanger sticking on their buttocks and making a scar, and that caused such a stir.
It was a particular place on the butt, though, as well.
Well, I can't remember. It was like right at the crack, at the top.
Exactly. So it wasn't on the fleshy part of it. It was right there at a very, very, very sensitive place.
Right, where it would be very painful. I mean, not that it wouldn't be painful somewhere else on the butt.
But it would be particularly painful there.
Particularly painful. And this is something that is, he's really an expert at finding where it is that'll hurt the most. And he does this verbally, and he can do this physically.
And
he has a long history and a long pattern of this. In other words, it's one thing when you see somebody do it once or twice in their life, and then you don't see it again. You pay attention to it, but you don't worry about it. But when you see them do it in a repetitive way, you know they're going to be doing it for the rest of their life unless they're treated.
And let me get to a question from one of our callers here.
Sure.
You have a question for our guest, Dr. Justin Frank. Gary.
Yes, Dr. Frank, I'm wondering, because of your Democratic connections yourself, could it be that you're attacking the message? I mean, you can't attack the message, so you're attacking the messenger?
Thanks for your question, Gary.
I am a Democrat, and I am very concerned about what the direction that our country is going in. At the same time, I've never been frightened about a president's competence and his ability to think and function. this is a different kind of thing from, I've never felt, I'm over 60 years old, I've never done an in-depth psychoanalysis of a public figure before because I've never felt so frightened by a president or by a leader. And there have been other leaders I've very strongly disagreed with. Usually they're Republican leaders like Reagan and Nixon, but I've also disagreed with Johnson on Vietnam, and I thought he was quite grandiose. So I'm not like singling out somebody in order to support my political beliefs. There's no way I can divorce myself from them, but it's been a constant effort for me in writing the book to be as fair-minded and straightforward as I can, because as a psychoanalyst, I treat all kinds of people who have very different points of view about the world, about marriage, about their life, about relationships than I do, and my views aren't necessarily the right ones, and so I have to actually put mine aside and really pay attention to them. And that's an ongoing struggle that I have as a psychoanalyst, and I do it regularly, and I've been doing it for 30 years, and I did it in this book also. What is the issue with him is it's not so much about the message, it's about how he behaves in certain ways that are very disturbing. They are.
Is it also, if I may interrupt, Dr. Frank, is it also because George W. Bush now has the opportunity to stick the firecracker up the butt of the world?
Well, I think that that's a very interesting statement. And one of the things that has been happening in terms of the butt of the world, he certainly has stuck it up the butt of Baghdad. And he has certainly bombed the heck out of Baghdad and not really done much to rebuild it. And despite what he says and the recent reports that have come out in the last week, even by the Pentagon and by various other researchers, are saying that the infrastructure is really bad. And the contract people who've been trying to work there to rebuild Iraq are leaving, and that we don't have any way of dealing with the insurgents, et cetera, et cetera. This is a guy who is fundamentally a destructive person.
And give us some examples of the destructiveness that you have observed through your research and your analysis.
Well, he can be destructive in the simplest of ways. For instance, at a press conference, there was a guy named Jack Smith, who was a radio newsman, who was invited to be in some of the TV press conferences, and he said at one point to President Bush when he was asking a question, thank you for having me here, I'm normally on the radio, and he said, Bush says, you have a perfect face for radio. And everybody laughed. In other words, he's too ugly to be on television. This is a constant capacity of his to put people down, to make fun of them. In terms of being destructive, he now does it in a very specific way, which is very interesting to me, even though it's frightening, and that is he does it through indifference. For instance, how slow he was to respond to Katrina, how he turned his back on the plight of so many people there, how he then goes down there for various television photo ops and makes these speeches but doesn't even view the destruction. And it turns out he knew that the Levees weren't going to hold, and yet he says in public, who would have thought this could happen, when he actually had something written out and handed to him a few days before that
who
it
would have
happen.
Thought that somebody would have taken a plane and driven it into a building?
Right, when he knows about it. So his way of expressing cruelty and destructiveness has changed over the years and become much more sophisticated. However, when he's in a political fight, the way he expresses it is through allowing it to happen by telling other people to do it. So, for instance, he never, when the Swift boat attack on Kerry happened during the recent campaign, he never said anything about it. He let it go on and on and on, and never intervened.
We have to take a break.
Okay.
I'm talking to Dr. Justin Frank. He's joining us from Washington, D.C. I'm Liz Brown. This is the Wake Up Call. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my bag. Stay with us.
If there is corruption, I'm not surprised that people say, let's get rid of corruption. If government hadn't been responsive, I'm not the least bit surprised if people say, I want government to be responsive.
Your wake-up call, global. Dateline Detroit. General Motors announced a loss of $8.5 billion for 2005. Most of its money losers were in its North American auto operations. Back in November, the automaker said it was going to shut down a dozen plants and get rid of 30,000 workers. Ford made a similar announcement last week and says it, too, will be putting 30,000 workers out on the street. General Motors used to dominate the market with 50% of all sales in this country. Now that number is down to 25%. Its world sales picture is just a mere 15% of the market. Toyota is expected to take over the top spot this year as far as the global market share is concerned. Analysts say the American car manufacturers goofed when they decided that SUVs were going to be their cash cow. Those sales dropped like rocks when gas prices began to rise sharply. General Motors is now poised for a possible takeover by renegade investor Kirk Kerkorian, who has now acquired a 10% stake in GM stock. That's apparently put pressure on upper management to respond to his demands to turn the company around by using harsh, cost-cutting methods. Kerkorian is believed to be laying out a long-term plan to acquire General Motors at a bargain basement price and then sell off the best assets of the corporation before he throws the rest of it into bankruptcy and then walks away with mega billions for himself. This is your wake-up call, Global News Update.
Talk radio that discusses what matters most to you. It's coming to AM 920, Monday, January 30th.
You know that even today, 95% of the world's jury trials are held here in America. Juries are one of the ways American society guarantees the rights of citizens on trial. Unless you don't answer your jury summons. Your right to a jury trial is like so many other American rights. It comes with a responsibility. The American justice system is the envy of the world, but it only works when we do our part. The American Bar Association Commission on the American Jury reminds you, do your jury duty.
This is Dr. Laura Schlesinger with a personal invitation for you to join me from 2 to 4 every Monday through Friday afternoon on WGNU. It is so great to be back in the St. Louis area, and I'm looking forward to talking with you here at Radio Free St. Louis about your personal, work, and family problems and issues. Dial 1-800-DR-LAURA, that's 1-800-DR-LAURA, and let's take on the day. Join me, Dr. Laura Schlesinger, 2 to 4 Monday through Friday afternoons on Radio Free St. Louis. AM 920 WGNU.
It's the information you need to know about but can't find anywhere else on the dial. The award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown.
Also had pictures with thousands and thousands of people, and I mean, people. It's part of the job of the president to shake hands and with people and smile, and I do.
This is Mondays at 9 with Liz Brown, where we take a closer look at issues and people shaping our world. Once again, here's Liz Brown.
Welcome back. Welcome back. This is Liz Brown. I'm talking to Dr. Justin Frank. He is the author of Bush on the Couch, Inside the Mind of the President. And Dr. Frank, how good is this book doing?
Well, my book was doing pretty well, despite the fact that it didn't get a lot of support from the publisher. It was actually sold, it was a bestseller for a while in 2004 when it came out, and it's been reissued in paperback this past summer and with a new epilogue that carries us through the beginning of 2005, goes through the 2004 campaign, the primaries, the debates, the election, and then the State of the Union from a year ago. So, and it's doing well as a paperback, and it's being translated into different languages and published, and lots of people are very interested in it. And
well, we only have about 8 minutes.
Oh, I want to. I know you want to ask me something. There's a couple. You play these great quotes, and I just have to say again, you repeated the Abramoff one, and I think that one of the things that was important that I was noticing and listening to at this time was how much the press laughed at his jokes and at his statement. Well, I have my picture taken with you, and I don't know you. Well,
what but it's my job to shake hands and smile.
I wonder if the press themselves are as gullible or as stupid as they appear to be. I just can't believe that everybody is. But they really go along with him in a way that is so deferential. It's quite disturbing to see. Plus, his attitude towards them is the attitude he has towards the rest of us Americans. And he said it, if you can find this quote, which he said in Quincy, New York, on May of last year, he made a comment, which I have right here. It said, "See, in my line of work, you got to keep repeating things over and over and over again for the truth to sink in, to kind of, this is an amazing phrase, catapult the propaganda." But basically, that's what he does. And as far as the other things, I'm responding more slowly in some ways because there's so much to respond to in what you asked. One of them was about evidence of his destructiveness. I thought, I don't know if you've read the new book that just came out by James Risen from the New York Times, called The State of War. He's a reporter for the Times. And if you get a hold of it, it's worth it. If you can get him on your program, he's really just very knowledgeable. And he made a comment at the end of his book, which I have right here, which just came out this last month, that he said that one of the most damaging legacies of the Bush administration has been the militarization of American intelligence. And what he has done, what that means is that George Bush has single-handedly put the CIA under the control of the military. When the CIA was established, the main reason it was established the way it was by Truman in 1947 and Congress was to have it separate from the military, and that it was very important to have intelligence, but to not always think that the intelligence is only going to be used for military purposes, but we might have ways of negotiating treaties, might have ways of understanding people without necessarily relying on military solutions to all our problems. Well, what Bush has done is he has virtually destroyed the credibility of the CIA and destroyed it in many ways and has put it under the arm of Rumsfeld. And these are very destructive things that are happening domestically. And I'm thinking about him being destructive, he's just destructive of a lot of American values in terms of our attitude towards human rights, and yet he tolerates all this torture, our attitudes towards the importance of the rule of law. He says, well, laws are only important if they if I can circumvent them when I need to. He doesn't feel that we need to hold to our word, which is very un-American in my experience. Usually when an American speaks, especially to foreign countries, you can usually take them at their word. Well, with him, you can't. He says, well, there's weapons of mass destruction, there's this, there's that. And then he just lies about things. It's a very frightening thing.
We have about seven more minutes here. Sure. I'd like to get to the relationship with he and his father.
Okay.
Because I've read stories, I've read reports that he and his father are no longer speaking, that they go to family events and they don't say anything to us. Give us a brief breakdown of their relationship.
Well, my sense is that the term breakdown you give is actually what's happened. I think there is a breaking down of their relationship from what I can tell. I think that his father has spent the last few years, it reminds me of the way you clean up a baby's diaper, picking up the pieces, raising money for tsunami victims. For all intents and purposes, it could be raising money for Katrina victims. He is essentially a person who has had a great disagreement with his son, and even in this book, State of War, which just came out by Risen, he talks about the conversation between his father and George Jr. when George hung up on him at the end of 2003 over the decision to invade Iraq.
And if I could just interrupt, there's one comment I cannot repeat the quote because we're on radio, but there's a quote that you give on page 142 of your book when he was being interviewed by David Fink, and Fink asked the younger Bush what he and his father talked about when they weren't talking about politics, and he said...
He said the slang for a woman's anatomy.
Yes.
And
now that's just shocking and on so many levels.
It's shocking on many levels. One is his contempt for women.
Yes.
And you see that in everything he's doing. not wanting them. I mean, you know, the question about reproductive rights is, of course, controversial, but certainly the idea that that they have no option of making any kind of a choice is based on real contempt. His contempt for Laura is very clear when he called her at one point in one of his campaign stops in San Francisco, the lump in bed. I can't wait to get home to the lump in bed next to me. And he jokes about her sweeping the front porch getting ready for the Chinese ambassador. He is very contemptuous of women.
But it also,
he's contemptuous of his daughters.
Okay, with contempt for women, what else does it show?
It also shows that he is able to deflect questions immediately, which is one of the great qualities he has, which is that as soon as that you ask a question that he doesn't want to talk about, he thinks of the worst thing to say and the thing that's most off-putting, and that it shuts up the reporter completely.
What do you say when he responds like that?
I mean, what do you say when you ask the guy that question and he's running for president, or he's like the son of the president? I mean, this was before he was running for office. This was when he was still...
If this is true, what does that make of him as a married man?
If it's true, what does it make of him as a married man? It makes him not exactly the greatest. Certainly his father is well known for having had this long extramarital affair,
yes,
with his own Jennifer, not the one that the same name as Bill Clinton's Jennifer, but this was George Bush's Jennifer, who was a long-standing lover of his, Jennifer Fitzgerald. But what it also says is that he's not going to talk to anybody about his father, mm-hmm, and that what they really have in common are these kind of very primitive boy talk things that you hear in the locker room.
He also got into a fight with his father when he was younger, and we have 1 minute left here.
He got into a fight with his father when he was younger, and basically... a lot of people say he's finishing the job his father started about going into Baghdad, but it's become pretty clear that that's not what he's doing. He wants to destroy what his father did.
Mm.
And he kept his father from speaking at the convention. This is a man who was in the White House for 12 years. Reagan had just died, and here's the Republican convention. And
you know what? You're absolutely right. His father didn't speak, did he?
No, he didn't. He didn't speak, and then as soon as it was over, he assigns him to do a job with Bill Clinton, the guy who beat his father. I mean, he knows how to stick it to people.
Yes, he does. And we have 1 minute left here. What's the worst quote that you read from him, that you've heard him say?
The worst single quote is exactly what is happening now, which is how I actually open the epilogue in the book, which is, I'm going to go exactly to it, and I'm sure you have this on tape because it was fairly widely distributed when he said it in last August. He said that terrorists never stop thinking of ways to hurt the American people, and neither do we.
Mm.
That's the one that's most revealing about his attitude.
Dr. Justin Frank, where can people get a copy of the book, Bush on the Couch?
Bush on the Couch. It's in paperback, so it's... user accessible. You can get it either online at, you know, Amazon or Barnes & Noble. You can get it at any of the big bookstores. It's there. You have to ask for it because it's not on the front tables anymore.
Thank you so much, Dr. Justin Frank, author of Bush on the Couch, Inside the Mind of a President. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
Bye.
Listen, folks, Liz Brown, I'll be back same time, same place tomorrow. Stay strong.
Say that progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below me.
I think I'm hearing revolution from the AM brothers.
For the issues that matter most, it's AM 920 WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Daria Aldinger. 4 years ago, the collapse of Enron dominated the headlines. Today, the top two executives at the energy trading giant went on trial.
So far, 16 former Enron executives have pleaded guilty to crimes ranging from securities fraud to insider trading, and some of them are expected to testify against founder Ken Lay and former CEO Jeff Skilling when the trial gets underway. Federal prosecutors